I want to kill everyone. Satan is
Good
good.
morning. Satan is
Satan is
good.
our
You
pale.
sound like the New England Patriots.
Yeah,
Is
they're part of.
that Robert Kraft
That's
you're
his chant,
impersonating?
yes. That's what they say in their huddle.
Yeah, coming from two Bills fans.
Yeah.
Bunch of cheaters. It's like a corrupt Gotham, man. They buy who they need to buy. It's like the Kingpin in Daredevil.
Yeah. There's gonna be a party in Western New York when Brady retires.
Yeah.
I'm sure. No, I was doing a chant that I learned from
From the
the
burps.
movie.
I
Yes.
got it. I'm not that slow. I'm slow, but I'm not that slow.
I just wanted to spell it out for you, Mike. In case you had wiped it from your memory so that the evil did not corrupt you.
That's right. I
Yes.
did see the movie. I just didn't remember much about it. The only parts I remembered were those creepy motherfuckers.
That was the same for me, actually. I definitely did see it. I saw it
Yeah.
a long time ago. And sometimes when I've seen something before, I'll start remembering things that happened before they happen. But
Yeah.
other times, if my memory of it is not too good, as I see it, I'll remember that I saw it before, but I won't be able to predict anything that's going to happen. And
Yeah.
that was the case with this.
Well,
I
I'm a
didn't.
lot older. I don't remember anything. All I remembered is those gray-haired dudes. You know, I remember them and them being whacked out.
Yeah, Kara watched it with me. Actually, she remembered all of it because apparently her and her friend watched this movie a bunch of times when they were kids.
Yeah.
So she hadn't seen it in a long time, but she saw it like 10 times when she was young, so her
Yeah.
memories of it were pretty strong. But yes. But other than that, yeah, I think you had a nicer weekend than we did out here. It's been rainy all weekend.
Oh, I had a great day yesterday.
So you had some nice sunshine.
Yesterday was fantastic. We just hung out at the zoo. It was a good time. We had a good lunch. I came back. I did a podcast. We watched Daredevil. I read some comics for today. And it was a good day. But man, I didn't
Yeah,
want to
nice
get up
weekend.
this morning. Fuck. We had gotten so much sun. When I get a lot of sun, I'm just a lot tired. You know, I get sleepy. And I didn't want to crawl out of bed. And I was like, Harley's gonna kick my ass if I don't take her for a walk before we podcast. So I have to get up. I have to. Or she's gonna be like, she'll have her squishy, squeaky toy, and she'll be running to me, and she'll go squeak, 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 like for an hour, you know. She's a good.
Yeah, she gets restless if she needs to go
She needs to go for her walks, and now she's even getting more spoiled because she goes twice a day now.
Yeah, I got up kind of early and took Mabel out for a walk. We went around the block.
Yeah, we usually go about on a, I think it's about 3/4 of a mile that we go on. And we see all kind of wildlife. It's like it's near a sand creek, so we see all kinds of like wildlife.
Oh, that's
And
nice.
we're supposed to have a mountain lion fucking near there that's been reported. We haven't seen it. And I'm like, Harley, if we see a mountain lion, we gotta get the fuck out. You don't do your weirdness and wanna approach it. The other time we had like 5 deer, and with the deer there were like 3 babies, and you usually don't want to fuck with a baby when the mama's around. And I'm like, Harley, let's leave these deer alone. They saw us when we were kind of far away, and they moved. So I was like, thank goodness, I don't want them to charge us. If I sound nasally today, I am. The weed pollen count is like really high over here. We have to even start giving Harley like some allergy medication more than she usually gets because she's been really itchy and bad.
Okay, wow. Yeah, the pollen's been pretty bad here too.
It's like all the tree pollens and stuff, they're like dropping, but the weed pollen is like at its all-time high over here right now.
Yeah, it's been kind of bad here too. It's that time of year, I guess. But I was gonna say, yeah, the we had some deer in our yard a couple weeks ago that Mabel saw, and she was very interested in them, following them around the house and stuff. But we weren't outside when
Yeah.
we encountered it.
Then we have coyotes, and usually I only see one, and I'm like, one's cool, but when you see a whole pack, there was one time I saw a pack, I said, we better get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I would think so.
I saw five, and I never ever. There's a lot of times I go for a walk, especially towards the fall, and it's early, and it's darker in the fall than it is in the summer. You get a lot more daylight. So I like walk, and I was like, oh, there's our usual coyote we usually see. And they're usually pretty timid. And then I was like, wow, he's not moving this time. And then I look, and there's like four more. And I'm like, oh, shit. Go, Harley, let's move.
Uh-oh. Yeah, you don't want to mess around with
She just wants to play.
that. Yeah.
That's the one thing I kind of feel bad about. If we had it, I can't have another dog because I can't walk two dogs. I have to walk them. But I think she would love to have like a playmate because she just
Yeah.
likes to play.
Yeah, I think that this same about Mabel, that she probably enjoy having a friend, but it's I don't know if we'd be able to handle taking care of them
Yeah.
both, you know. She's a handful on her own. So
You want to start off with the burb since we already started talking about it, and then we could get in the listener questions because we got a lot.
sure. Yeah, sounds good. I really enjoyed it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun, and I took actually a lot of notes, more than I normally do, just stuff that happened that I jotted down. But I mean, it's a pretty simple premise. It's
It's in the vein of like Neighbors, except
it's
it's instead of being focused on Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, it's more on the whole neighborhood or the suburbs and
Yeah,
their
it's.
weirdnesses, And Corey Feldman like loves living there because he knows they're all whack jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, it came out in 1989, directed by Joe Dante. Stars a couple big names and then a bunch of actors that are familiar faces. People kept popping up in the film, and if I didn't know their name, I definitely knew their face. But the big stars are Tom Hanks in the lead role, Bruce Dern, Carrie Fisher plays Tom Hanks's wife, they're Ray and Carol Peterson, and as you mentioned, Corey Feldman is in it as a neighborhood kind of teenager, I guess. And
He's one of the Frog Brothers from Lost Boys.
right, yeah, and not as maybe well known of a name, but definitely a prominent character in the film is an actor named Rick Dukeman.
Was that the doctor?
No, that's the guy that plays Art, who's kind
Art.
of like Tom Hanks's character's buddy.
Oh yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. I just don't know him.
Yeah,
It's one of those
exactly.
faces you see all the time, but
Right. Yeah, the main. So as you said, it takes place in the suburbs, obviously, and specifically in a cul-de-sac, and it pretty much focused on that little cul-de-sac and the families that live there, and one house in particular where some new neighbors have moved in a month ago, and they're really weird. Their last name is Klopek, and their house is really bad, and the lawn's not taken care of. And as the movie begins, Ray Peterson, Tom Hanks's character, he goes out with his dog, and he sees some weird lights and sounds and noises coming out of the basement of the house. And that's when that sort of kicks off him and this other guy, Art, who's this neighbor that he, it happens to be that his family is out of town and he didn't go with them. And then there's a third guy, Mark Rumsfeld, who's played by Bruce Dern. He's like ex-military and he's still all about the military. Everything he owns, including his like underwear and his car cover and everything, it's all camouflage. And he has a wife, Bonnie, who's played by Wendy Shaw, another familiar face. And she's
The
like the high
sexy person,
voice,
but she's like the
sexy.
sexy that everybody checks out. Like Corey Feldman walks out there one time and he says, "Oh, I see you got rid of the tan lines," because she's like bent over doing gardening. But Bruce Dern, that or was his name? Is his name Bruce Dern?
The actor.
Yeah. What else has he been in?
I
He
know.
looks familiar, but I can't. It's like one of those things I can't place. But I really did like his character. I don't know. He's just like that militaristic. Like one of my favorite scenes on there is when the dog shits in his yard. You know, he has that dog, that little puffy. I don't even know what kind of dog it is, but it looks like some rich guy at the end of the block has this dog, and he's got like this well-kept yard. And it looks like he kind of like looks down upon his neighbors. Like he always goes out to get his paper, and he's like, you know, they're not nearly sophisticated. Their yards don't look like mine. He looks like he's very well to do. You know, his house is the house that stands out in the neighborhood. He always lets his yappy dog out, and it goes and takes a shit on Dern's yard. And his wife had to hold him back, you know, because he was gonna kick some ass.
And he was, and he, the guy kind of, Walter is the name of the dog's owner, and him and the dog are important to the plot later. He's an older guy, and he purposely kind of lets the dog out to poop on others' lawns.
Yeah.
Bruce Dern, I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff back in the day. He was in some westerns.
That's probably what I know him from. If he was like in Clint Eastwood's or some well-known Western movies.
Yeah,
Because
he's
my
been in
dad
a
used
ton
to
of different
watch all
stuff.
of them.
Recently, I saw him in a movie called Nebraska that came out 2 years ago about he played the old father with him and his son. They go on a trip together. It's like a black and white indie movie.
Yeah.
But so the three of them, they get more and more obsessed with figuring out what's going on with the neighbors. It's pretty funny. There's a lot of little funny moments. When they introduce Ray, he's actually hunting a bird with a gun, and or when they introduce Art, he's hunting a bird in Tom Hanks's backyard and shoots at it, almost shoots Tom Hanks when he comes out on his back porch, and all Hanks does is invite him in, and he starts just like eating everything in their house
Yeah, he's
practically.
like the
He
neighbor
goes in their
that
fridge.
he's like the Kramer, you know, in Seinfeld. He just goes into their fridge and he really feels like he's welcome there. He doesn't ask, you know, "Oh, you guys are making breakfast. Can I have some?" You know, it's like.
And this movie started, and I started cracking up because one of the first things we see is, well, early on, the next day after Tom Hanks is seeing the funny stuff in the basement, he's sitting at the window looking out at the neighborhood, and his wife comes up behind him, puts her hand on his shoulder. He's just kind of keeping an eye on the neighborhood, and I started cracking up like, oh man, I think this movie is about me. And then he's talking about how he doesn't want to go to the lake. Like his idea of relaxing is just hanging out around the house, having some beers, and listening to the ball game. I'm like, oh my God, that
Homebody.
is me. But eventually, Ray and Art, they're kind of daring each other to go up and say hello, knock on the door, because they've seen this one character come out of the house who they find out his name is Hans.
That guy's been in movies too, as like just a supporting weird character.
He's kind of, he's a younger guy, he's dirty, just wearing an undershirt and some pants, and he's got unkempt facial hair, just kind of strange looking. Actor's name that played him was Courtney Gaines. But he's known for Children of the Corn, Back to the Future, Can't Buy Me Love. He's been in a bunch of different stuff.
That's what
But
I
it's just
remember.
a,
I've seen all of those.
yeah, a lot of supporting roles and stuff. So they're daring each other to go over there, and when they get up on the, there's lots of fun camera work where the music starts getting real ominous, and everyone's around the neighborhood is watching them, so they do close-ups on the faces of all the different people in the neighborhood watching, even the little dog. And wind starts blowing at their faces. And when they get up on there, they Art's foot goes through the porch because the wood is all decrepit. And the number on the house is 669, and then 9 comes loose and flips over, so it says 666. And they go to ring the doorbell, and push through this section of the paneling, and a whole bunch of bees come swarming out. So they go, they're swarmed by bees. They start freaking out, running around the neighborhood. And the lieutenant, Bruce Dern, he's like, "Run to me, run to
With
water,
the
run to
hose.
water." And he's got the hose. So they're rolling around on the floor, and he's hosing them down to get the bees off of them. Corey Feldman's like, "Same kind of thing happened to me when I. Last week when I was over there, except it was a rapid squirrel." And Bruce Stern says, "In Southeast Asia, we call this kind of thing bad karma." So that's kind of maybe sort of the first act of the film. And it escalates from there where Art is telling Corey Feldman and Tom Hanks about this story about this guy that operated a soda fountain, and for the longest time people were smelling weird smells out of the man's house, and eventually they found out that he had killed his whole family. So it especially gets worse when they the next night their crazy lights come out of the basement again at the Klopek house, and it's worse than before. They see the garage open, and someone drives a car down to the end of the driveway. It's Hans, and he lifts this huge garbage bag out of the trunk of the car and stuffs it in a, tries to stuff it in one of the garbage cans. He has to use this stick to, and he really aggressively pushing on this bag to get it to fit into the garbage. And then he just gets back in the car and
Really
backs the car back up.
creepy car, no headlights. He just comes out.
Yeah, just one of those big, massive sedans that they used to make in, back in the day that, you know, you could just run into another car and it probably wouldn't dent yours at all. You could fit like three or four people across the front seat. So the next day, when two garbage men are collecting the trash, and the garbage men, both of them are actors that are in a lot of movies. The one is Dick Miller, who has a more prominent role as in the Gremlins movies, which are also directed by Joe Dante. And the other guy is an actor named Robert Picardo, who is a familiar face, has been a lot of different things. He's He was also in one of the Gremlins movies, and he was on Star Trek Voyager as oh, what was his character's name? I might think of it, but anyways,
I didn't watch it.
yeah, I mean, but I'm just trying to think of the cast member they play, but he's done a lot of voice work and stuff too, cartoons and things. Anyways, he was he was a doctor, I think, on Voyager. Anyways, so they were wanting to get into the trash before it got collected. So Ray comes running out, and the lieutenant follows him, and they're just dumping the trash all over the street and getting into the back of the trash and digging through it, trying to find evidence of what Hans was stuffing in there. But they can't find anything. Well, the night before, Tom Hanks, he looked out his window and saw like three different figures in the backyard of the Klopek house in the rain digging holes. So they're thinking that they came back out and took whatever it was that Hans stuffed, and they're thinking it's a body or something. And decided to bury it in the backyard instead. And for the rest of the movie, there's just this pile of trash. The garbage men never pick it all up, all the stuff that they dumped all over the street. So the rest of the movie, there's this pile of trash in front of the Klopek house. But
That was weird though, because the trash men, you think they would pick it up.
They were just kind of complaining, like especially the one that Dick Miller plays is, who's going to pick all this up? You're dumping this all over the street, and they say, "Well, you're the garbage man. I pay your taxes." And he says, "Well, I pick up bags of trash, not
I
just
don't
trash
pick
dumped
up
all over the
trash,
street."
yeah. Well, the one guy helps him. He's like dumping
Yeah, the other
trash.
guy. Yeah. He's like, "What? What?" He asked me to, do it. But anyway, this is where they end up discovering, because that little dog is wandering around the neighborhood, that Walter's missing, the old man, the owner of the dog, that they haven't seen him in a while. And so they decide to go see. They think, oh man, maybe that's who got killed. Yeah, so they go to Walter's house, ring the doorbell, and Bruce Dern answers the door because he went around and used one of those things that you can pull the window pane out with, and like and broke into the house. But so they're walking around the house and trying to find out if he's there. They think maybe as an older man he collapsed or something, but they can't find him. But they do find his toupee on the oven. So this is where they really start thinking they killed Walter, and they start trying to do research. And Art and Ray are sitting together in the basement, and they have this book on demonology. And that night, Ray ends up having a bad dream where, he dreams of Satanists, and that's where they really start focusing in on that Satanist angle. That's where the chant comes from, is that he's, well, it's actually Art that comes up with the chant before the dream when they're talking about it, and he's trying to convince Tom Hanks that it's that they're Satanists, and that's the chant that he comes up with. I want to kill everyone. Satan is good. Satan is our pal. So when Tom Hanks has the dream, he sees an actual satanic cult, and that's what they're chanting. Just kind of a funny discrepancy there with the seriousness of the vision. And when, so he wakes up, Ray does, just completely burnt out. He's super tired from not sleeping well, and this is when Carrie Fisher steps in and is like, I'm getting my husband back. I'm not, he's not coming out to play with you guys and your crazy theories, and he's gonna rest. He needs to get some sleep. So he's just lounging later that day in the backyard on a recliner, and with some empty beer cans next to him, and Ray sneak or Art sneaks around to talk to him. And meanwhile, they're not really paying attention. They have a dog too, Ray and Carol, named Vince. And in the background, he's just kind of like digging along the fence to the Klopek's yard, and they're not really focused on him. And he comes running up, and he's got a big human femur bone in his mouth. And Art just kind of looks, doesn't really look at the dog, just sees it has something in its mouth, so he grabs it and throws it for it to fetch. It goes running, grabs the femur bone again, brings it back, and he's about to throw it again. And he looks at it, and he's like, "Holy crap!"
Yeah, I think that they did a good job, setting it up like Tom and Hanks and the neighbor are really being harsh on the neighbors. You know, it's just
Right.
coincidental shit.
Yeah, and it gets worse and worse as time goes on.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job setting that up. I mean, they are weird and they're very to themselves, but
Exactly, yeah.
it gets to the point where, they actually, the wives say, fuck this. Let's go over, let's make some brownies and go over there and meet the neighbors and quit fucking around.
Yeah.
And they go over there, and then I think the wives start to realize that these guys are fucked up. I mean, they're weird.
Yeah, they
They
start to regret it a little.
come over, and the house isn't well kept at all. It's like falling apart. And the Bruce Dern character is like, he's in their business. Like, he's like walking around the house. He's like checking the wallpaper. He's inspecting things. He wants to go into the basement. The wives are trying to keep him from going crazy, and that's when I think the wives realize that something weird is going on, and
Yeah.
that's when Tom Hanks, he's a skeptic. He's like the one that doesn't want to believe his friend that things are really fucked up. And then
Yeah.
he actually finds the toupee in that house. And he's
Right.
like, something is really fucked up. And that's when he switches like totally to the other side and says, we gotta do our job and find out who these people really are. But
Right.
they do a good job with the three characters. Like the kid looks innocent, like he's just doing what he's told to do, like a young kid.
Yeah.
The older brother looks like he's just there helping the doctor, and you don't know what the doctor is. He kind of looks like a mad scientist when he comes up from the basement. I've seen that fucker before. This is where I remember the movie, is I think when they visited those guys, and I'm like, those guys are
Yeah.
whack, man.
Yeah, and
Because
he's
it's like
been a lot of
faces you
stuff
don't
too.
forget, yeah.
Yeah,
And
the first guy they meet is Uncle Reuben. And then the doctor's name is Werner. And I was going to mention that another thing that the lieutenant does is he's carrying the brownies over like they're a weapon. And then when they get on the porch, just like happened earlier, he goes like right through the porch with both legs, falls through, and he goes, "Goddamn brownies." And for some reason that line made Kara crack up, and she just couldn't stop laughing at goddamn brownies. And it was one of those things where I started laughing because she was laughing at it, you know.
Yeah.
I think she was like, it was like taking her back to when she was a kid and laughing at this movie. But
He didn't really give a fuck about the brownies, but he wanted to use the brownies to get into the house. That's why he was upset.
yeah, he asks Uncle Rupin, "Klopek, what is that, Slavic?" And Uncle Rat Reuben says, "No." He talks real funny. And he's like, "Well, about a 9 on the tension scale there, Rube." But the doctor, he comes up from the basement and shakes Tom Hanks's hand, and it's covered with something red. It looks like blood at first, but he says it's paint. Yeah, the actor that plays him is really familiar looking. His name's Henry Gibson. And he's been in a ton of different stuff too. Blues Brothers, Wedding Crashers. It's like everybody in this movie that wasn't a name you'd know, they just you've seen them in a ton of different stuff.
Yeah.
But so yeah, like you said, at this point, well, Tom Hanks says, "All right, well, let's just go check out this basement." And they're trying to stop him. He opens the door, and this huge Great Dane comes flying out. Like, you keep a horse in the basement? But so
That's a Harley's part Great Dane.
yeah,
Yeah.
they're big dogs. So what Hanks does is he pretends that he's done with it, that he's not interested anymore. He even tells Art and the lieutenant in front of his wives and of the wives that he's done, that they need to leave them alone. But then he convinces his wife to take their son and the dogs, because they took in the Walter's dog, to the lake for the day. And it's actually, he says that he's going golfing, that he just needs a break, but it's all a way to get his family away so that they can really make an assault on the house.
And I like how Corey Feldman character, he's like he invites friends over, like, well, the first time they like are watching at night when they're trying to see what's going on with the
Oh, yeah.
trash can, and
With that girl.
he has his
Yeah.
girlfriend
And
over.
his jacket was hilarious. He's got like a black leather jacket with studs all over it. It was like Michael
Yeah,
Jackson jacket.
it's awesome. But he basically says, you know, she's like, why can't we go to the movies, you know, and this blah blah blah, and he's like, this is better than the movies. And the thing I liked about it was she actually got into it. Like
Yeah.
they were on the porch just watching these old fuckers jump around and hide behind things, and
Yeah.
they're laughing their asses off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, for this ending event,
He
he
has he
has a
has
whole
his
party.
but his whole buddies come over, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, I guess my assumption was that if he had parents, they just were like neglectful, like they just weren't around or something. Unless I missed the line, but it's like he just kind of did what he wanted and his parents are never around.
Yeah, I don't
But.
know. They introduce him as like he's gonna paint the house, and I don't think he ever paints.
No, he's just got paint. There's cans of paint all over the porch, and there's like a couple different random streaks of different colors. Like he started, never finished and stuff, but
I like how the Bruce Dern character says, you know, when they decide to do this and they wait for the car to back out, he pretty much gets a sniper rifle out.
oh my God, and
He's
he's
on. He's
so
on the.
excited.
He's like excited, and he's like scoping from the roof. Like he's got the walkie-talkies to the other guys, because the other guys are actually gonna break into the house.
Yeah, he's the scout. He's the lookout. He climbs up all the way on top of his house because it's a good vantage point to look at the Klopek house. So he's the lookout, and he's got walkie-talkies. And they know from the incident where the Great Dane escaped the house, he set off some alarms and stuff, that they have a bunch of alarms on their house. So Art climbs up the electrical pole, and he's like, "Are you sure you know how to do this?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, it's fine." He gets up there, and as you expect, he cuts the wire and he gets fried, and he goes flying and goes right through the top of a shed in the Klopek's backyard. He comes out, and his fingernails have turned black, and he's like, you can't touch him because he's so electrified. But as you started to say earlier, the reason that they're doing all this and they're convinced at this point that they killed Walter is that they find Walter's toupee between a stack of magazines when that whole incident, and Tom Hanks explains that to the other two, and that's why they're all on board to really go for it. So as Ray and Art get into the house, they go down to the basement because that's where they keep seeing all these lights. They find this like really old intense furnace that shoots out, when they turn it on, shoots out this huge gust of flames. As you said, the lieutenant's up on his house, and the Corey Feldman, his buddies are talking to the lieutenant, and ask him when something's going to happen, and some of the kids are getting restless, waiting for something to happen. But I forget what it is. Oh, it's, I think that he sees someone coming or something like that, and the lieutenant goes to get his gun. Yeah, he goes to grab his gun. He falls off the roof, and his gun goes off and shoots out the passenger side window in his car.
And that's when they're like, everybody goes, "Yeah,
yeah!" They're like, "Finally." And by this point, Ray is digging in the basement, and they cut back to him, and he's
this
probably
was
like
classic
good, like,
Tom Hanks right there, just digging.
Yeah,
he's digging,
digging like 3 or 4 feet into the basement.
He's deep.
Yeah, we were talking about that. What you were just saying, we were talking about that last night. How this was definitely like the still in the early era of Tom Hanks, like pre Sleepless in Seattle. You know, when he just had a ton of roles. Like he got known from Bosom Buddies, and he was thought of more as a comedic actor. And he has a lot of opportunities in this to just like, and he does it really well to like act like, you know, just like a normal dude that's like getting kind of out of it, you know. But as the Klopex are coming back to the house, and they actually have cops with them, they strike metal, and Ray realizes that he's hit the gas line.
Well, it's pretty cool because Art is like, "You found the coffin, you know, you found where they buried the guy," and he's like, "Yeah, I think we did." And he keeps digging and hits the gas line, and Art gets the fuck out. Right? He's like, "It's gonna blow," and they're basically with the cops saying that these guys were breaking and entering into our house.
Right.
And he goes, "Well, that was your house. It blows up."
it's
like it blows up.
Explodes. Like
it's
no
really
more
cool
house.
Because the backstory of these characters, like supposedly, is their last house burned up.
Right.
Like so you're thinking like, well, what? I mean, you as a viewer are thinking like, what if they were in another suburb and they had wacko neighbors that were spying on them and blew up their house? You know, the first time too.
Right, yeah, these poor people are just getting picked on.
Yeah.
Because
they're
that
different.
They're gone all that day, and the reason that they know that the Klopex are going to be gone is because they tell them when they're over at the house that he teaches at the university and that he's a pathologist. So you're even thinking, okay, he's a pathologist, so if anyone would legitimately have like a femur bone, something around their house, I mean, you wouldn't normally bring that stuff home, but it's the closest to making sense that you could get. But so when Carol comes home at the end of the day, it's just funny to see the shot of her car pulling into the cul-de-sac, and it's just chaos. You know, the house is on fire. There's cops and just everybody running around. There's this party with a bunch of kids outside. It's just this whole chaotic scene. And you really, one of the things I liked about the movie is you're really thinking like, this is the story. Like they got way out of hand. They just were super suspicious. And because these guys were weird, they, you know,
destroyed their house.
Their
Even
house.
Tom,
yeah.
Tom Hanks is telling Art, like, just leave me the fuck alone. You
yeah,
know,
like,
you caused
yeah.
all this hysteria.
We're the lunatics.
We're the lunatics. We blew up their house. And he's hurt because he didn't get out like Art did. Art got out.
Right. Yeah, he comes out.
He's kind of blown to bits.
Like you said, classic Tom Hanks. He's just
yeah.
super slow, and his face is all messed up, and he's in bad shape. And
he gets on the gurney, right?
Yeah, that was one
he's
of
like,
my favorite
take
moments.
Me, yeah, this is what where you really think this is classic Tom Hanks, because they don't even like want to. They don't even. They're like treating him like this is gonna be like we're not gonna have to take him to the hospital.
Right.
But he's on the gurney and he fucking plants himself, and then he picks up the gurney and throws it in the ambulance.
Yeah.
And then lays in. It's I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Now let's go. You know, I'm ready to go to the hospital. He's already kind of lost it. And he's in the gurney, and then here's where they throw a fast one on you, because that doctor, the mad doctor of the house, he gets into the, and he says, "I know you know what's going on. We forgot about the note," because there was that note, right?
Oh yeah, they put the
they put a note. And Art did it, and he didn't tell Tom Hanks, but the note said, "I know what you're doing." So it kind of plays into it, because the doctor's like, "You know what's going on," and Tom Hanks is like, "What the fuck are you talking about? You know, we blew up your house, we fucked up," and he's there to he's basically putting in a syringe something to take out Tom Hanks because they were evil people.
Well, and he also says, "You looked in the furnace. You saw what was in the furnace."
Yeah.
And there were bones and stuff in the furnace, apparently. There was another note, too, which was kind of a funny line from the police officers, because while this was all going on, Walter actually comes home. So they are wrong. Walter actually was not killed. He had a medical emergency, and his son came to get him, take him to the hospital.
Yeah.
So...
But
so
the weird
this,
thing
so you're
is
also
the,
thinking that contributes to thinking as a viewer, you know, that they're totally off base.
Yeah, they were like, "Oh fuck, he's back." They're like, kind of get out of the house, and that's when they kind of hit the gas line.
Right.
But they're still digging, you know, because they're trying to radio in saying, you know, Walter's back. It's kind of weird though that the daughter and the son-in-law don't take the dog; they just leave him there.
Yeah, I guess
I get the impression it was 2 to 3 days that this went over, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I guess he was kind of filling the blank that maybe the emergency happened and then they came back and the dog wasn't there, because Tom Hanks actually does write a note and says, I have your dog.
Yeah.
And slips it under Walters. So the police officers, when they come, they're like, and on top of it all, there's a man at the end of the street that says that you are holding his dog for ransom, because he misinterpreted the note that was
left
for him.
Hans gets into the ambulance and starts driving off, and they wreck it.
Yeah.
And that's, so there's like ultimate chaos. The back of the ambulance rolls out, and you have the doctor and Tom Hanks fighting on the gurney. And
yeah, they drive the ambulance right into Art's house.
Yeah, and then isn't there also something that pops open the trunk on those weird people's car?
They open it on purpose, I think, because the reason that there's an accident is the pizza dude finally shows up.
It was a lot of pizza. God damn.
Yeah, there was a ton of pizza.
It was like if they were having a block party, and there was only like 8 dudes there.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. But yeah, once they actually... So they're having the fight on the gurney, and once Tom Hanks gets the upper hand, he makes a citizen's arrest, because now he knows he was right, and the doctor has admitted to him that they actually killed the previous owners of the house.
Yeah.
And so
I hear your dog playing.
Oh yeah, she showed up.
Yeah.
She's got this Kong toy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, she's so rough on toys too.
Oh yeah, so is Harley.
It's
she
like
does
if
the
she,
mess.
Yeah, if she can find a seam, she'll just start picking at it, and then if she can get it open, she'll start tearing the stuffing out.
Yeah. Like right here, you hear that? That's a squeaker that she ripped out of one that's sitting here. She like rips out those squeakers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like we got to keep a steady supply of toys going here. So we tried a couple of them. We kept as long as we could, and that just got to a point where it was so shredded. And
you know what's turned into like a really good mystery box is the bark box.
Oh yeah,
like we subscribe to that, and it's awesome because Harley like knows when she gets her box.
Nice.
I don't know if she can smell like what's in there or something, but it's like hilarious because it's like when I get my stuff, a box of comics, right? She gets like her box and she's like me. She's like ready.
Nice.
She stands at attention. She's like, what's going to be in my box?
Nice.
And they do a really good job, like, you know, between toys and like various treats and stuff.
Yeah.
We're pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I might have to look into that because she definitely gets excited about new toys.
At least 1 month, it'll give her a couple weeks to destroy those toys, and then you get
Right.
another set of, two or three toys
Yeah.
they play with.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
So yeah, the last couple moments of the film, as you said, they open up the trunk of the car and it's just full of bones, human bones. And that pretty much settles things. The cops are there and they're convinced. Hans tries to disappear. He's wearing like a traditional like German outfit. So they're like, "Hey, Pinocchio, where are you going?" And Geraldo Rivera is supposed to come, and Art, as I said, the ambulance, they drove it right into the front of his house. So like, "Art, your wife is home and your house is on fire." And he says, "My wife is home?" And then it zooms back out, which we didn't mention that it has the traditional Universal opening before the movie starts, but then which features the globe or the of Earth. And this actually zooms in on that Earth into America, like it's zooming down into the cul-de-sac, and then at the end of the movie it zooms back out to the globe again. So yeah, I really was glad I chose it. It was very fun, entertaining 80s movie, because one of the things is like there's a lot of silly slapstick stuff, but it's played seriously by the actors, and I think that's what makes it more funny. Like, there's just not a lot of like, it's really goofy and silly, but at the same time, for some reason, it didn't hit me like some of those, like, I don't know what I'm trying to compare it to, but nowadays, with some of the comedies that are just too self-aware or something, I don't know what the right description is, like some of those, like, scary movies or something like that. But yeah, I just
Those are different though. Those
that's
comedies
true.
are in the vein of like Naked Gun and
It
like
is
the
different style.
ridiculous stuff. Yeah,
Yeah, it is a different
totally different
style.
style. They're making fun of the genre is what they're doing.
True.
This one's just the right. This is like if you like Neighbors, you'll probably like this movie. Neighbors is more extreme though, I think. Because it's just John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, and it's just weird stuff. Like if they had that on Netflix, I would choose the shit out of that because I love that movie. I love
Yeah.
Neighbors. Well, I love when I get those two guys together, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. They don't have
Yeah.
it though, or else I would have choose that. So are we still gonna choose a movie, or what are we gonna do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I got one.
What were
I
you
don't
thinking?
remember if it's any good. I remember it vaguely. It's called Zapped with Scott Baio from 1982.
Okay, I don't think I've ever
Rated R, 1 hour and 33 minutes.
seen that. Let me look it up. Yeah, I was thinking we could do a couple more films before we, until we come up with something more long term that we want to do. Is that on Netflix Instant? Oh
Yeah.
yeah, I see it here. Explosion gives nerdy whiz kid Barney telekinetic powers. High school becomes fun. Barney can conquer bullies and make girls' skirts fly up. Yeah, that looks fun. Scott Baio. That's definitely says 80s.
I used to love to watch Charles in Charge. They used to have that
Yeah.
on Netflix. I love that show.
Of our days and
Yeah.
our nights.
I was
That's
disappointed that they took it away because I was going through like season one and season two, and I only started watching it in season two, so all the season one stuff was new to me. It was even a different family. Then you had Willie Ames, and it was pretty, I don't know, I liked it.
Yeah, what was the actress that was on there that was on Baywatch later? Nicole something?
Oh yeah, she was
Eggert?
the older daughter.
Yeah,
Yeah.
was it Cole Eggert, I think, or something? Charles in Charge. That's funny.
So we have some questions, and then we could get into comics. So let me
A lot of
find,
questions
yeah,
from
from William.
Mabel. She keeps, I have this duster and she keeps grabbing it, thinking it's a toy.
And their mouths full of dust.
It's not too dirty right now, but I was like, that's not a toy, it's gross. Silly.
What the hell just happened?
To your computer.
No, I'm trying to find the questions, and I can't see the comments. I don't
I can bring
understand.
them up. Oh,
This
it's
is weird.
Grandparents' Day.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on? Oh, view all 10 comments. Okay, there we go. Oh, we got questions from Alan, Norbert, and William. William had a lot of them. William says, "Thank you guys for taking the time to do the podcast." He also says, "How many millionaire superheroes and villains are there?"
Well, Batman, Lex Luthor,
Kingpin.
Iron Man.
Yeah.
Those are the first ones that come to my mind. Let's
The
see.
guy who adopted Beast Boy, Mento, I think his name is, or
Oh, right. Yeah, the Fresh Maker.
yeah, he was definitely Mentos.
I stole that joke. I think it was from Legion of Substitute
Yeah.
Podcasters that I stole that from.
You don't want to put them in a Diet Coke. Explode.
No. Yeah, if you put
Oliver
them both in
Queen,
your mouth, your head will explode.
he was
Oh yeah,
rich.
Oliver
Sometimes he's
Queen.
rich, sometimes he's not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that.
The Green Hornet, definitely. He was filthy rich. He owned a newspaper and he inherited from his father, who was the original Green Hornet.
It's the Shadow. Rich too, Lamont Branch, Lamont
Creighton, yeah,
Creighton.
he's well to do, that's for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of the pulp heroes that were based on like Batman and stuff or around that time that Batman was based on were rich.
Yeah, Batman based on them kind of more, but
Because
yeah, I think that's part of the reason that
they didn't
Batman
have
is.
superpowers, they could afford all these gadgets and cars and stuff
Well,
like
that's
that.
it, yeah. A lot of times the heroes that don't have the powers, they have the money, just like Tony Stark, you know, because they that gives them an advantage that
Yeah.
they can make use of, which, like, I guess.
I think Reed Richards has been rich. I mean, he's been poor too, but he had a lot of patents at one time, you know, like they were very well to do. They lived in a freaking Baxter building.
Right, you kind of have
You
to
have to be
assume,
rich.
you
You
know.
have all these, you could buy all these gadgets and all this science stuff. It costs a lot of money.
Right. Black Panther.
Oh yeah, he's the king of Wakanda. That's a good
Yeah. There was someone else. Well, I think Ted Kord for a while there had a lot of money through his company and stuff to fund the
Oh,
tech
Ted,
that
yeah.
used the Blue Beetle.
Ted Kord was rich, yeah. Booster Gold had all his what do you call it? Licensing that he'd wear on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
That's a
think
good amount.
Wonder Man might have had a lot of money from making movies and stuff. He had that
Hollywood.
Hollywood connection.
That's a good list.
Yeah. So the next one is this is from Norbert. He says, "Since you talked about Dragon Slayer movie recently, is there any interest to cover the early 1980 movies, The Archer and the Hawk? The Archer and Hawk the Slayer." So I think The Archer's one movie and then Hawk the Slayer is another.
Yeah.
I think I heard Knutson talk about Hawk the Slayer, or he mentioned it in DC Noise. I've never seen it.
Yeah, there's someone else that commented, Jerry, that Hawk the Slayer was one of his favorite movies growing up.
Yeah.
I've never seen either of them.
I don't think that's on Netflix, is it? I'll check.
Hawk the Slayer.
No. It would be one of those ones you have to get the DVD. If I got a DVD, I bet I can find it.
Yeah, probably. So, yeah, those are I think I may have heard of Hawk the Slayer before. But the Archer, it's kind of hard to say. That's more of a common name.
Oh, it's got Jack Palance.
Nice.
So
So you
yeah,
never know.
we could do that sometime if we, because we both could get you have the DVD option, right? That's how you watch Dragon Slayer.
Yeah.
The other ones, do you read to your dogs? I do. That's for sure. But I don't I always like to read out loud sometimes, especially if there are accents involved and stuff like that. I don't know why that is, but I do.
Yeah, I haven't read to Mabel too much. Haven't The opportunity hasn't come up, but I'm sure I'll try it at some point. I know you used to do that with Scooter a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, Scooter
In
and
particular.
Risa.
Yeah.
So, what's the next retro TV show? This is William. He says he votes for Planet of the Apes. I don't know when we'll get into shows again because it's like a long commitment. But
Yeah. I mean, we probably will at some point,
yeah.
but when something really strikes us. I One thing about Planet of the Apes is I didn't realize there was a TV show, to be honest, before he mentioned it originally.
Yeah, I don't
I knew
have
about the
it.
movies, but
We
do
have
you
the
know?
box set of the movies. I knew there was a TV. I might have watched one of them as a kid because I watched the Planet of the Apes movies as a kid when they would come on TV, But then the TV show, I may have seen like one, but I didn't really watch it. I heard it's pretty good. I think who told me this was it's the artist of G.I. Joe. Shannon Gallant. I think I could have sworn that Shannon Gallant mentioned because Shannon is very into like retro TV. So like when I was talking and we talked a lot about Buck Rogers and Wonder Woman and $6 Million Man and stuff. So I think he mentioned to me the Planet of the Apes.
Gotcha.
So Alan Middleton says the genre or the type of story that doesn't interest you. That one for me is easy. It's fantasy, but like you could see with Dragon Slayer, I sometimes verge into that. So, and
Yeah.
when CrossGen did fantasy comics, I liked them. But that's the one genre that I don't usually care. But I'm re reading more fantasy now than I've ever read.
Yeah, I don't know if I really have. I guess the only one I would have would be romance, which.
Oh God, you're missing out on that, man. Oh
Well,
God.
I mean, that's with comics, like the retro feel. Like, I think I don't. I sort of put that in a different category because it's.
It's so real though. It tells you about like what the time was like. It's so insane.
Yeah.
The romance comics to me have like so much historical they're relevant and they have humor to it. Like they're ridiculously funny.
Right, and
Like
that's why I
it's
think
like
it has
reading
an appeal.
comedy. Yeah.
That has an appeal on its own. Like I sort of make an exception for that type of like old school romance comic. But if he's just talking about like a genre and like generally speaking, when it comes to like movies or novels and stuff, like
A romantic comedy, you don't care.
if it's strictly a romance, like I don't have any problem with. Like romance is like a subplot in other genres, and having that be an aspect of the story. But I
Yeah,
tend
if you
to
can,
not just go straight up
I agree
romance.
with you if you change mediums. In other words,
Yeah.
I don't usually want to see a romance movie, but like some of the ones that I have seen, I absolutely love. So, yeah. But you have to drag me to those things. Like if it's a TV show and it's romance based, I don't give it. I don't want to ever get into it. But if I happen to come across it, I may enjoy it. With the comics, though, it's different. And you don't see romance comics. I mean, the closest you can get is like the True Story Swear to God by Tom Beland, you know, stuff like that, which are
Yeah.
usually autobiographical. But, and I love that True Story Swear to God. But like, I love them. I love the romance comics for the retro and the way roles have changed over time. Like, they're drastically different. It just makes me laugh. They make me happy. Like I read something that just recently came up, and it was a secret romance. I talked about it in my latest podcast. I absolutely loved that comic. Like I thought it was amazing. So that it's like Paul Cooperberg did everything in the vein of old romance comics, and then he did it like with the Tales from the Crypt type twists, and I thought it was amazing. But
Yeah,
I
I
could
think.
see why people don't navigate to him. But I would even consider like Archie, and I love Archie. I would consider it sometimes to be a romantic comedy because it's like who do I go with? Betty or Veronica? It's like an ongoing theme with them. And then there's other girls that are mixed into the mix, like Cheryl Blossom and, you know, others.
Yeah, I
There's
mean, even.
Josie and the Pussycats and stuff.
Right. Yeah, even bringing in comedy to romance makes it a little more palatable for me in other genres. I think it's probably most out of all, not in other genres, but other mediums. Out of all mediums, comic books is probably the medium that it would be most approachable to for me because I really like the medium of comic books. I can read almost any kind of story if I like the story and the art. I like it's my favorite medium to experience a story.
And you'd be surprised at the artists that have done romance comics. Like you're talking about like awesome names like Garcia Lopez and Jack Kirby and I mean there's a ton of like popular artists that have touched that genre.
Yeah, especially anybody who was working in the 50s, you know, when and during that stretch of time when superhero comics weren't really popular. I mean, they needed to do other genres or they wouldn't have any work, you know.
Yeah, it was Western and romance and sci-fi at the time. It was striking people's interest. If you like romance comics, there are places for them now. If anybody listens and wants to try, there's a weird romance from IDW, which are reprints from like DC, Charlton, other publishers. And he takes segments of the stories and puts them in, not in their entirety, but just like the one story is from Charlton Secret Love, and then one's from like DC something or another, and all these indie, they're mostly indie publishers, but they're really interesting. So I highly recommend IDW's Weird Love or whatever it's called. The other one that Charlton Arrow started to do, which it's just brand new, is Secret Romance. And that one I like even more because it's a modern day. It's like modern writing in today. And it doesn't have the retro feel, but it's got the retro feel of romance comics. And then it's got like the what do they call the endings of Tales from the Crypt? Like the twist. It's like, oh, are they O. Henry? I can't remember what the term is. But it's got that formulaic. Where you're reading this romance, and then and some of them are heart-wrenching. Like there was one I read, but yeah, there's stuff out there that you could do. Like Alex and Ada, that's an Image comic. There's that, where he falls in love with the robot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there as far as romance goes that mix with other genres. The next question is: was there ever a character who just stayed dead? I think Jonathan Kent stayed dead until they brought him back, but
But yeah,
it was
exactly.
a different bringing back. It was like a different universe. I think everybody that died in Marvel has come back.
Yeah, I feel like the only characters that haven't come back are ones that just aren't popular
Uncle
enough.
Ben, he hasn't come back.
Uncle Ben, yeah, that's probably it's the only one I can think of that's not just a completely minor character.
Gwen Stacy, but she's come back as a clone.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of count that as coming back. They found a way to make it acceptable, you know, but still sort of is coming back.
And then she's in Spider-Gwen, so she's come
Right.
back in a different universe.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
then
I
you have
think.
her in Ultimate Spider-Man, she's still alive, so.
Right. Yeah, I think Uncle Ben is the answer. I mean, and Daredevil's father, right?
Yeah, you never saw him come back. Or the Waynes.
The Waynes. Well, they sort of have done Thomas Wayne, an alternate reality version of him on Earth 2,
On
right?
Earth too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you call alternate universe stuff, it's hard to find anything. Uncle Ben and Pa Kent. But the Kents were alive when Byrne reinvented them.
Right.
So it used to be like you could always say Bucky Barnes and and Jason Todd and you could say a bunch of stuff like that, and you can't do
Yeah.
that anymore. There's probably a couple of legacy heroes that I'm just not thinking of where the main legacy hero died and somebody took over. Mr. Terrific.
I was just gonna say,
Oh, but
you
they
made me
did
think of
bring him
Mr.
back in
Truth.
Earth 2. They brought, he's the
True.
white Mr. Terrific, so they did bring him back.
Terry Sloan.
He's that Terry Sloan is a crazy motherfucker right now. Yeah, so yeah. He was dead for a long time, though, until that new Earth 2 came on. Until the new 52 reinvented the other Terry Sloan. I'm sure there's some, but the Phantoms, the Phantoms are dead once they're dead. Their legacy, the ring passes on to another son or relative. That's the whole thing of the Phantom, the Australian hero.
Yeah, and you're making me think of the different JSA characters, and I don't think the original Dr. Midnight has ever come back. Charles McKnighter. 'Cause they haven't really done anything with Dr. Midnight on Earth, too.
I thought he had died though, and then when they had Earth 2 come back, he was alive. Like, I'm not
Yeah.
talking about the new one, because they had the Prestige Dr. Midnight series that was the different character, the different Dr. McKnight, whatever
Yeah,
his name is.
Peter Cross.
Yeah. And then they had the female, right? The black Dr. Midnight.
That was in between,
Yeah.
yeah, the
So,
two.
yeah. That's a good one, but I'd have to research that. Because then they were like stuck in limbo for like a long fucking time. Didn't he die in Zero Hour?
The
There
original?
were three, yeah, there were
I don't know.
three JSAers that died in the original, because they were in limbo and then they came back and they
Yeah.
died. Can't remember which ones. Brian would be know the answer to that because he's a Zero Hour specialist, but
Yeah.
so let's see. Superman was raised on a farm. Were there any other heroes or villains raised in the same environment? I can't think of any.
No, I was running a bunch through my head. I can't think of any other farm heroes, at least that are, not just some minor random character
Yeah,
that might be out there, but.
Superboy spent a lot of time on the farm. And
Yeah,
in some
that's.
incarnations, Superboy was Superman, but I'm talking about like Connor.
Right.
He took Connor to live with the Kents for a while. He also took Matrix Supergirl to live with the Kents, but she was more of a robot that had a thing for Lex Luthor at the time. But
Yeah, and that's all connected. I mean, that's the same farm. It's all
yeah, the
connected
same
to
farm.
Superman. So to think of a character that's totally like not connected to Superman, it's and that a farm that's not the Kent farm. The Kent farm for young superheroes, for young Kryptonians.
Yeah. What retro title, this is also William, do you think would make a good TV movie or TV show?
I think there's a lot of them. I mean, one that's on my mind because I just read some more Grimjack. I saw that question from him, and so that made me think about Grimjack as a TV show. It'd be a good like sci-fi channel show or something, or where they could do because of the nature of the universe where they have all these different realities. Like you could jump around and do different genres. It'd give you a lot of variety on the show.
I'd like to see a John Sable one. I think that one would be really good. That's my independent one. I'd like to see an Adam Strange show. That would be cool. Like on RAN, you have Adam Strange and you could have him bounce from Earth to RAN and all the sci-fi political intrigue you could have. And you could have like the Thanagarians fighting him. So yeah, I think that would be cool. Or a Martian Manhunter one, like retro Martian Manhunter, where he was a detective, but he's also a Martian.
Yeah, that would be a cool like they could do it like as like a sci-fi detective show crossover kind of cross genre. That'd be pretty
Yeah.
cool.
I think they're doing amazing with Daredevil right now.
How far are you guys on
I'm
that?
on 7.
That's
I just saw Scott Glenn as Stick. And I was like, this is fucking awesome. Like,
Yeah,
I was
he's
like,
such a
he was so good as Stick, man. I
he's
was
such an
like,
asshole.
yeah, he was so cool. I dug the shit out of it.
I actually watched it twice. I watched it once by myself, and I told Kara she would probably like it. And
Yeah,
when we,
did she?
yeah, she did. Yeah.
Yeah, me and Barbara are watching it now. I'm episode 7, and I think there's only 13, so we got 6 more to go. I'll probably watch one more tonight, so
Nice.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, that actually leads me into what I was gonna say was just I was trying to think what. See if we could come up with, like, besides the ones that they're already planning to do, what would be another Marvel title that they could do as a Netflix show? Because they're going to do Jessica Jones, they're going to do
Luke
Luke Cage,
Cage.
Iron Fist, and they're going to do, like, a crossover. So I'm trying to think, like, what's another character they could do?
I would like to see like a Werewolf by Night or something, like, Jack Russell. I think a werewolf TV show could be really cool. But I would like it to have the retro feel. Like, I wouldn't want them to modernize it.
Yeah.
I would want it to take place in the 70s.
Shang-Chi
Be awesome.
could be pretty cool.
Yeah. There is a TV show. I was on the TV Guide site searching for new shows just to see what was all coming out. And there was one that interested me because it sounded like a modern day Kung Fu, I think I want to tell Barb I want to add that to my queue, so yeah.
Add to your pull list.
Yeah, add it to my pull list of shows. I'm gonna if I don't catch up on I want to catch up on Daredevil and I want to finish Penny Dreadful before the floodgates open, but I don't think I'm gonna get through Penny Dreadful in time.
Ghost Rider, I think, would be a cool show.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
In the same kind of way that they reclaimed Daredevil from the movie, that even though they had done the movie, they went ahead and done a show and just try to do a more faithful representation.
I love how they're doing Gotham now. That's like Gotham Central. I think it's really cool.
That those are some good choices.
Anything. If they want to make any comic movie, I'd watch it and
Yeah.
enjoy it. So, let's see. The next one is from William as well. He said, "Did you ever wonder what character's sexual preference was based on the way he or she was written? Sexual preference, like if somebody was gay or they didn't know they were gay?"
Yeah, or if maybe more back in the day when gay characters were less common, like if you wondered if maybe the character was meant to be gay, but they didn't come right out and explicitly say so or something.
I can't think of any offhand.
That's
Like,
a tough one.
yeah, I'd have to. I early comics seemed very heterosexual until the 80s and 90s, you know. So I guess that is kind of retro, but you know, some of the first ones you had Northwind and I mean not Northwind, what's his name? Ariel and North's what's the Alpha Flight guy?
Is it? It's not nor no, or a North Star?
North Star. Northwind is Infinity Inc., isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then you have Obsidian from Infinity Inc. You have Batwoman. A lot of the stuff has been modern stuff, though. At least
Yeah,
what
and
I
it's
think
not,
is
and it
modern.
wasn't where.
Where it's not looked down upon as much as it was back then.
Well, what are. Oh, I was trying to think. There have been some cases where they've retroactively, like recently with Bobby Drake.
Yeah.
Iceman, where they've
But
said,
that was a weird one, though.
you know what, I think that's all based off of those, like in like X-Men number one, where he's not interested in the way that the other guys are, and
And
Jean
Marvel
Grey when
Girl,
she
yeah.
arrives. But I think at the time they were just trying to show like that he was younger than the rest of them. He wasn't into girls yet, not that he was gay. But they're just taking like a different interpretation and running with it. But I don't really think that like Stanley was trying to imply that Bobby Drake was gay. And it's like I don't have a problem with it if they if he was, but I don't really think that they were. It's like definitely a retcon.
So the next question is, what retro hero villain would make a great action figure? Don't forget about accessories. Think they've made almost every action figure, that even the obscure ones that I've ever wanted. DC Direct or with the Eagle Moss figures. I can't think of any ones that don't exist anymore. Like even like the Wrecking Crew. I used to always love those guys because they used to show up in Defenders. They're starting to come out now. Like they had the Eagle Moss and they're starting to come in those Build-A-Figures ones. So it's like your Thunderball and all those Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, a lot of times I think when it comes to action figures, it's more of a modern question because you like what ones haven't they gotten to yet that you want to see, you know?
I can't think of any that haven't. I mean, there's no Brother Power the Geek action figure.
Yeah.
don't think it'll ever exist.
No, but they've made Olmec,
Yeah, they made
made
Commandy. I
Commandy,
mean, they've done like all
all the new
kinds of.
gods.
Yeah. It's I can't think of any anyone's. Even on the, you've had Spawn, you've had Savage Dragon, you don't have any Valiant ones, except for the goat in action figure. I guess they could make some Valiant figures. That'd be pretty cool. They have the mini mates, but
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
yeah, or some of the cross-gen figures. That would I would buy some of those.
I'll get like a Armstrong action figure. He could come with like a keg of beer.
Right. One of those bottles that has the XXX on it. The last question is, are there any heroes or villains whose power set changed to reflect the changing times in our world? I think Superman currently, I think they thought he was had too much powers, and they wanted to see what a person would be if he was totally depowered.
Yeah, so they gave him a power that would rid him of his powers. But
Iron Man's always technically changing his thing to be relevant to the current time.
true. That's a good one too.
The technology heroes always change with whatever's hot in technology. Or
Yeah.
whatever's like going to be thought of is it doesn't ex necessarily exist, but scientists are talking about.
Right.
Yeah, they usually put them in the comics.
Cutting edge. Trying to think if there's any scientific powers or mystical power characters that have changed in that manner. Well, William's a professional when it comes to coming up with questions.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at it. Comes up with some tough ones.
All right. Well, that's the list of the questions. We had a lot of them. So, do you want to jump into comics?
Sounds good. Let's see. You want to start? You want me to do one?
Either way, you want to do one?
All right. Yeah, I'll go ahead. I read DC Superstars number 10. I talked about DC Superstars of Space on an earlier episode. This is actually Strange Sports Stories. And I picked up this issue because there's a Kid Flash appearance, but I'm not really going to talk about it at length on From Kid to Flash because he doesn't really do much. I'll just mention it in passing. So I thought I'd talk about it in more detail here because it actually, whereas sometimes the Superstars Giants were all reprints, this actually, the feature story is actually a new story called The Great Superstar Game. It's the cover story. The cover has Batman and Superman on standing on a baseball with some other characters in the background, and they're strike one, strike two, they're punching out Lex Luthor and the Joker. It's such a funny gimmick that this story. It's actually a baseball game between nine heroes and nine villains. It was written by Bob Rozekas, penciled by Dick Dillon, with inks by Frank McLaughlin. And the superhero lineup is Superman pitcher, Batman catcher. So if you're ever wondering about that, who pitched and who catched between those two. Sorry. Wonder Woman is second base. Robin,
That
left
would
field.
make sense.
Yeah. For poor Batman. So yeah, Robin's left field. Kid Flash is shortstop. That's a good position for him. Plastic Man, first base. That's a good position for him. Great Green Arrow on third base, Black Canary in right field. You're gonna say what on this one? But the Huntress. Now this is the Huntress in the animal print cape and
The bad guy.
One Piece. Yeah, the bad guy.
Wow.
And then on the supervillain side, you have Lex Luthor playing center field. The Joker is the catcher. Kronos.
They're gonna lose so bad.
Kronos is in the right field. Weather Wizard is in left field. Dr. Polaris with the tied purple mask is in third base. Matter Master is on second base. Felix Faust is on first base. The Tattooed Man is the shortstop, and Sportsmaster is the pitcher. The two umpires are Uncle Sam is the plate umpire, and Amazo is the field umpire.
I would have put Amazo on the other team of villains because he could be the pitcher. He'd have all kinds of weird different pitches.
Yeah. I mean, there's
Because he
some
could channel
interesting.
all the heroes. The villains, man, they don't match up very well to
No.
the heroes at all.
There's some weird characters too, some weird
Plastic Man on
choices.
first is an excellent.
Yeah, that's what probably that might be like the best position matchup,
Who
like
is shortstop again?
on which team?
On the superheroes.
Kid Flash.
Oh, that's a great choice.
That's a
But
pretty good,
you could
yeah.
actually put him in the field too, and he can cover the whole outfield.
I know, technically he could like just
Cover the whole field
cover
himself.
the whole field, yeah. But if
Who
he's
was
gonna
on
play one
shortstop
spot,
for the villains again?
Tattooed Man.
What the fuck?
It's just weird, yeah.
That, I guess he could form objects like Green Lantern and try to catch the ball every, I don't know.
Yeah. So the reason this all happens is that actually you have the Huntress and Sportsman or Sportsmaster who are actually a married couple at this time. And the Huntress, they're actually like having a domestic squabble, which for them means Sportsmaster is going after the Huntress with a tennis racket and she's fending him off with a chair. And so they're having a fight about Huntress talking about how the supervillains never win, and she's going to give up her life of crime to become a superhero because supervillains never win. This sportsman's like, "That's over my dead body." She's like, "If that's the way it's got to be, then," and she throws the chair at him. So like, all right, let's have a friendly baseball game. And if the heroes win, you can switch team. You can switch to being a hero, but if the villains win, then you gotta stick with me and continue to be a villain. So you're thinking, well, how are they gonna pull this off? But they have some kind of device where they can teleport different characters. So they set up some situations, like they have this $250,000 bowling tournament for the Wayne Foundation, and the Joker and Matter Master show up and try to rob the place, and Wonder Woman as Diana, or no, actually it's Dinah Lance, not Wonder Woman. So Dinah Lance, Oliver Queen, and Bruce Wayne are all there, and so they, you know, put on their costumes to fight the two villains, and when they're all out and about, they zap them over. So there's several different sequences where they do this with different combinations of heroes and villains. There's a funny moment where Wonder Woman is somewhere where Weather Wizard and Kronos attack, and she goes to use her magic lasso, and the lasso is actually Plastic Man. So all these different scenarios that eventually bring all the heroes and villains to Crandall Stadium, and Sportsmaster and Huntress explain the situation, the proposal. And Superman says, "Well, suppose we don't want to play." And so to get the, like, the villains are into it, you know, but to get the heroes along, they have trapped 66,000 people in the stadium, and they're going to be stuck there forever somehow, unless the heroes agree to play. So the heroes choose. Wonder Woman in particular suggests Uncle Sam as one of the umpires because of his trustworthiness. And Lex Luthor suggests Amazo. He says, "I can't vouch for his honesty, but since he's an android, he'll have to tell the truth." So they're playing the game.
That's a bad call. He could have, Amazo could have been the pitcher. Because he could have done so many different stuff. He could have channeled, you know, Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman and another thing.
Yeah, maybe they just couldn't think of anyone else that on their team this could suggest. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Actually, there is a moment where the tattooed man has a baseball mitt tattoo, and he touches it, and it catches a ball that Black Canary hits.
Yeah, he's just a construct. You know, he could turn his tattoos into real life things.
So they kind of go through the game. They show you some different moments. Yeah, like there's a time where Superman is pitching to Lex Luthor and he throws four balls. And it's because Lex Luthor has actually a bat that's sending off vibrations that's keeping the ball from going over the plate.
That's awesome.
And like the
I forgot.
The villains...
I guess I didn't think how smart Lex is. So he,
Does
some shit like that.
And yeah, like the heroes are trying to kind of play fair, and obviously the villains aren't. They keep doing tricks and stuff like that. So eventually the heroes get sick of it, and like Plastic Man, he fakes out Sportsmaster because he's trying to run the bases, and Plastic Man makes a base next to the real base with his foot. And so Sportsmaster tags first base with, but it's actually Plastic Man's foot. So then he tags him out when he's on second. And Amazo's fine with it because he's like, hey, I respect that. That was a good trick. In the end, the heroes end up winning. And so the Huntress just said even with all the dirty tricks the villains did, the hero still won. And Sportsmaster is a sore loser. He just says, shut up. But it's interesting. There's actually a text page after the story, a full text page with a box score and everything. And it's actually play-by-play of the entire game. So if you wanted to sit and read, like, first inning, Wonder Woman strikes out, Robin doubles to left field, Kid Flash sacrifices Robin to third, Batman singles, driving Robin home, etc., etc. And there's a box score, and actually it looks like one of the best players is Black Canary. She had two doubles and a home run. She's the only hero that had a home run. On the other side, Tattooed Man and Sportsmaster had home runs. Sportsmaster had two.
Who was pitching on the villains?
Sportsmaster.
Oh.
It kind of makes sense that he would have done good. He had 8 strikeouts and Superman had 6. So it's just like all those, like as many stats as you would normally have from a baseball game, like,
I bet you got a kick out of this because you love baseball too, right?
Yeah. It's funny looking at the box scores. Like, oh, let's see. You know, like Kid Flash, he had 5 at-bats, 2 runs scored, 2 hits, no RBIs. Heroes had 12 men left on base. Villains had 8, etc. So, yeah, so the rest of the issue... is reprints. There's a story called The Super Athletes from Outer Space that is by Otto Binder and Grill Kane. This is actually from Strange Adventures, I think, where it's about a high school coach that discovers some athletes from Saturn that are using Earth to practice. Uh-huh. And he ends up coaching them. At first, he thinks that they're going to take over Earth, but they're just there to practice in Earth gravity because they're part of some event where they have to practice on all the different planets because they don't know what gravity is going to be chosen for the event. And then they leave behind like a space viewer, they call it, so that he can watch the team compete. It's kind of a fun little story. And then there's a reprint of Green Lantern, I think from an issue in the 30s, that had two stories in it, the original issue. So this is just one of the stories that was like 10 pages or so. It's where Hal Jordan, it's a John Broom and Gil Kane story called The Fight for the Championship of the Universe, where there's this kind of boxer-looking dude that's a huge, he's humanoid-looking, but he's just bigger than a normal. And he's going around to all these different planets where he boxes different challengers, and people are always telling him, "You're really good, but you should see Green Lantern of Earth. He could definitely hit you with his power ring. He could get you a while up." And so he gets sick of hearing about Hal Jordan. He finally goes to Earth and challenges him. And it's funny, his name is Brew Tusforce, and the newspaper man's calling it in, and the guy on the other end of the line says, "Brutus Force? That's a good name." So they call him, start calling him Brutus Force instead of Brew Tusforce. But Green Lantern's like, I don't do this type of thing. I'm not like an entertainer. I fight criminals. I'm not gonna accept this challenge. So Brutus Force is like, "Well, what's this crime stuff that he's talking about fighting?" And they're like, "Well, I guess they steal this money stuff." And so he goes, he's like, "All right, well, I'll just go steal money." And eventually Green Lantern has to agree to fight him because he's committing crimes. And so they have a boxing match, and Green Lantern's throwing boxing gloves at him, like out of constructs, and Brutus forces some kind of field around him that deflects energy. So eventually, the way that Green Lantern overcomes him is he speeds around the room really fast. And I don't know how he's using his ring to do this. Like, he's moving as fast as the Flash can. They don't really explain how he can do it. But the reason he's doing it is he wants to get
Speed
him
of
off his
light.
guard. Yeah, he's something like that, I guess. But he does it so that Brutus will take a swing at him where he's not, and it'll distract him, and then he uppercuts him and knocks him out. But the funny thing is that in the epilogue, Brutus is talking to his like right-hand man, that's kind of his show promoter. And he says, "Don't forget about that debacle on Earth. Green Lantern tricked you. He took advantage of it." "Don't say that. Don't ever say a word against Green Lantern. He is the greatest fighter in the universe." Now they're like, they both have like respect for each other because they fought. And he's like a big fan of Green Lantern now at the end of the story. So yeah, all told, it was pretty entertaining, even though I picked it up for the other podcast. And won't get much use out of it for that show. I'm still glad I picked it up, because I just find it really funny how they spit and went through and they put together this whole text page of that you could read through and see what the actual how the actual game flowed from, and that they put a box score together and everything. Is pretty funny type of silliness that they just wouldn't, do in the same manner today,
Yeah,
be an alternate reality or something.
I thought a lot of that stuff was reprints.
It is, yeah. I think
But
I'm most.
it's weird because the tail end of that series is all original.
Oh, does
So
it get
like
to where it really
issues
is all?
13 through 18 are all original stuff. A matter of fact, 17 has the first appearance of Helena Wayne.
Oh, okay.
And
Yeah.
16 has the first appearance of the Star Hunters, which I have the original series, but I don't have their first appearance, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I know it was mostly reprints, so I didn't realize that at a certain point it became all original.
Matter of fact, I just ordered number 17.
You gotta buy something that was caused by me talking about it during, or it's not an
Well,
episode.
I have to go after these because it ran from 76 to 78, and I
Okay.
only have number 5, which is a Flash reprint. That one's funny too because I have all the I have one of the original stories where Flash grows old fighting the top, and then
Oh,
number
yeah.
7 had Aquaman in it. It reprints Aquaman's and Teen Titans, and then 18 has a Dead Man Phantom Stranger story. So I still got a ways to go. There's 18, and I only have 3 of them. Well, now I have 4, and the one that's most expensive is this Helena Wayne by far.
Yeah, that
So I
makes
had to go
sense.
for like one that was VG slash fine. But she's gonna be in a TV show too, so it's just gonna make it more hot.
Yeah, that's true.
That sounds interesting though, like historically interesting.
Yeah.
We need another one of those, and like one of those holiday specials or something, summer special, where we have a modern day baseball game or basketball game.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. Dan DiDio, get on it. Make it happen. You like the Bronze
All
Age. All right, so my choice is I think all of my books are combing the just barely making the 10-year mark.
right.
So our rule is kind of like it has to at least be 10 years old. So I want to talk about Violent Messiahs from, this was in 2000. And the reason I bought it is mostly a Twitter thing. Somebody was talking about Joshua Dysart, who's the current writer of Imperium and been doing the Harbingers. He's done the Unknown Soldier for Vertigo. He's done a lot of other stuff. He's done Corn Boy. He's pretty much a go-to writer that I write. I like him. He does a lot of research when he writes, and he puts a lot of himself into his writing. So I was like, I'm gonna get this Violent Messiahs. This is from Image Comics from 2000. And I read the first issue, and I was like, that's kind of interesting. And then I read the second issue, so I'm gonna be focusing on the second issue. So Violent Messiahs focuses on, it's like a Gotham or hub city or some city that's just ridden with crime. And it focuses on one of the female lieutenants, and it focuses on a vigilante called Citizen Payne. And Citizen Payne, he cuts loose. He'll kill what he needs to kill to get the job done. And she's like in this vigilante squad where she has to go after the vigilantes. And issue number 2 opens up where she thinks she's narrowed down Citizen Payne to a particular building, and she's going to invade that building. And she's like a cop that's by the book, and she's real strict, and she doesn't have a lot of the respect of the other cops because she's not social. She doesn't have a lot of social skills. She just wants to get the job done. She's very by the book. And they raid this building, and when they raid it, they find she like has a scene where they're all in shock. They find a bunch of kids and their parents are murdered. Well, they think she runs into another detective and she says, "We just coincidentally ran into each other, but this isn't a Citizen Payne thing. This is a serial killing from the Family Man. The Family Man is a serial killer that's on the loose right now who leaves the kids alone while he kills the parents. But the parents have to have committed a crime. So, like, they could be drug user parents. They could be parents that are involved in some kind of weird shit criminally. And he goes after them, kills the parents, but leaves the kids." And this detective is becoming part of the story, even though they're going after different goals. She's going after Citizen Payne, and he's going after the Family Man. And then you get to know her better. She actually sleeps with a gun because she's always paranoid. And in one scene, Citizen Payne actually comes and visits her in her bedroom, and she just thinks he's there like it's her imagination, but she grabs her pistol and sleeps with it. But Citizen Payne has a father, and his father is kind of like telling him what to do and what he needs to do to destroy the bad guys. And it turned out to be a good story. Like, there's a lot of mystery, and I don't know who Citizen Payne is. I think the lieutenant's lives and the lieutenant is going to merge with Citizen Payne in some, because he's got this infatuation with her, and I don't know what their relationship is. At the end of the story, she goes back home, and Citizen Payne is there, and he's got a gun to her head. Well, actually, he's sitting in one of the lounge chairs, and he's got a gun to her, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's pretty good. It reminded me a lot of like Daredevil, because Daredevil's really dark, and the city is very corrupt, and it's like Daredevil's trying to fix the whole situation by himself, and it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. So this, in this world, there's so much crime that you have like these violent vigilantes that are out there, like Citizen Payne, and even the Family Man. He's even though he commits horrible crimes, he's doing it because the parents are criminals. He's trying to detach the kids away from these awful parents. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with it. On issue number two, I had posted a picture of it on my Facebook wall. And what really became interesting is Joshua Dysart said that this is like one of his first books when he started writing, and it's kind of raw. And he also said that the image is a photo reference, and if you look at the image, that's a picture of him at like 25 or whatever on the cover of it.
Yeah, saw that exchange. That was really interesting.
So that was interesting. Sometimes you read stuff and the creators actually come on and say stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a good reading experience. I bought Violent Messiahs. It's an 8-issue series. I think it had one of those send away Wizard Comics magazine things. You could get a 0.5. Remember they used to do that?
But I
don't have that issue. And then there was a follow-up. And even before that, there was a 3-issue comic. And I don't know if it was reprinted in this Image volume, but from Hurricane Comics that had 3 issues. Those are hard to find. Like the Image ones you can find if you just go on eBay or whatever, but if you try to find the Hurricane ones that were like self-published, those are difficult. So yeah, this was Violent Messiahs, one of Joshua Dysart's first books. I've read issue 1 and 2, and I find myself, as I got in issue 2, I'm enjoying it more, and I'm sure it was as I read 3, I'll enjoy it even more as they start to flesh out the characters.
Yeah. Cool.
I forgot to say who the team is, but Joshua Dysart is the creator along with William O'Neill. He's the writer. And then Tone Rodriguez, who also commented on that thing on Facebook, he did pencils. And the covers was Travis Smith, who did this image. And then Ed McGuinness had an alternate cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I've seen that comic around, seen issues of that around, and so I'm aware of it, but I didn't realize it was written by Dysart. That's cool. I think it was last episode where I read issues, all that I had gotten from the 50 Cent Bin, and that same store, right now their 50 Cent Bin, they marked it down to a quarter, so it's a quarter bin instead. So I was over there yesterday, and I didn't get a lot of stuff, but I did find a full run of The Land That Time Forgot, which I didn't read that because I think that was 2008.
Yeah, that was 12 issues,
which you've been reading.
Yeah, I just finished that, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
If you like DC Obscure, you're going to dig it. Plus, it's got like great art. Like, you have Graham Nolan, who was like a Batman artist doing some issues. You have Scott Collins. And then you have one of the more modern artists who does the majority of the book, but he does a really, really good job. I can't never pronounce his name, but he's really good. So you got great art, plus you got a great story. I mean, the story is just is they're plucking war people out and putting them kind of like on this one world. These aliens, and then I don't want to spoil it because you want to read it. You want to discover it, but that's what the premise is. So they have a bunch of people that they that you'll recognize, or if you don't recognize them, it's probably because you never read any of those stuff, but it'll make you want to pick up more adventures of, some of these obscure characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool that there's some Graham Nolan art on it. Speaking of Bills fans, I just saw he just posted on Facebook a picture of himself and his wife all geared up and Bills stuff.
Nice.
'Cause he lives actually like 20, maybe 15, 20 minutes from me, in a town nearby. But so yeah, so I got those. It's always kind of cool to find. I don't know this shop. I think they buy in bulk from people, or something, and then they cherry pick some stuff out of it, and then throw everything else in the 50-cent bin or something.
That's what my shop does. They
Yeah.
essentially say, well, I have like 10 books that are 30 or $50 books, right?
Right.
And they buy the whole box for like $20, and they know they can recoup their costs by selling those 5 books, and they will sell, and the rest of the stuff they just want to get rid of.
Right.
The only thing is my shop never puts in a 50-cent bin, which I wish they would,
Yeah.
because like if you could get the War That Time Forgot for a quarter, that's just insanely awesome.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah.
you're gonna get a good story. You're gonna get 12 issues of a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you get a complete story.
Yeah, and I think a lot of shops they might sell those for $1 a piece or something, and then just
Yeah.
wait for them to sell. And for whatever reason, the store they just throw
I
everything.
like that philosophy. It makes sense. 'Cause it's like this stuff in their mind probably won't sell in their dollar bin, right?
Right.
So they're like it's extra stuff. I don't want it to clutter my store, and I think that people will thumb through this and they'll pick and choose what they want, but I'll get rid of most of it 'cause it's so damn cheap.
Yeah, and then just the time and labor of like pricing everything, like where they focus instead on like Bronze Age and back,
Yeah.
and pricing that stuff. And so anyway, so the other thing I found that is old enough, and I kind of like it's interesting sometimes to pick up something you'd not even heard of, which is I found the 3 issues of a miniseries from Vertigo called Witchcraft. And the reason I grabbed it is because they're written by James Robinson. But I'd never heard of it. And there's actually a follow-up 3-issue miniseries that I got as well. And I guess from what I can tell, this is technically a Sandman spin-off. But I think the only thing that makes it a spin-off is that it involves the three witches that I think appeared in Sandman.
Cynthia, Morgana, and Mildred. Yeah.
Yeah, they appear and they're a part of the story, but otherwise, I think you really don't need to know Sandman. But this is from 1993, so this is definitely like a high point for Vertigo. Like they have that page where they show what else is like out that month, and you got Black Orchid, Sandman Mystery Theater, Shane the Changing Man, Hellblazer, Kid Eternity, Animal Man. Was like when Jamie Delano was writing it. Sandman's still going. You have Swamp Thing. Books of Magic is just starting. Doom Patrol is post Grant Morrison, but still going with Rachel Pollack. So lots of stuff coming out. But these are some like oversized issues. The prologue sets the scene where it takes place in Roman era, where the Romans come and conquer this town called Londinium, and it takes place in the year 133 AD. And this woman, Ursula Vinicius, she's highborn and Roman born, like her husband. She and some other women are together talking. And it turns out that they all worship Hecate, however you say that, the Queen of Darkness, goddess of death. And you know, that has three bodies, three heads, maiden, mother, and crone, queen of the witches. So they're worshiping in secret because the Venus is the favored Roman deity. And there's some other cults and stuff like that, but they're it says no religion is hated or feared more, not even Christianity. So while they're in the woods, they think that they're safe. They're worshiping their goddess. These men from they're a northern Pict clan from coming down, led by this man Ralph Bancuth. They come in and they start attacking the women and raping them. And the one woman, this Ursula, as the this man Cuth is on top of her, she calls out to the goddess and says, "This man who's cleaving on me and taking me, allow me vengeance. He will take my life, but there will be other lives. He will have other lives where I might attain this vengeance. Sacred Mother, hear me." And then her throat is cut. So that's a beginning, a very dark beginning. And then the three witches, you know, they're the connection here. They talk amongst themselves. You know, this Ursula, they ultimately decide to honor her request because she was the one who thought to call out to them in this moment where the other witches that were being killed, you know, didn't call out to them. So with that prologue is with the artist on that was Teddy Christensen, and then the rest of the story is Peter Snejbjerg. So the rest of the story concerns taking place later in the 1300s, and the main story takes place in 1342 and concerns a young girl of 17 named Faith Armitage. She's part of this convent of nuns that have been taking care of her, but she's to be wed, and the nuns are getting her ready for her wedding, and the man that she's going to be married is a man named Jack Calder. He's a coach builder and constable, and he's at this bachelor party for himself. He seems like he's not interested in like all the debauchery that's going on at first. There's a guy that's encouraging him, like you know, to he's pointing out different women and suggesting them to him, like local tavern wenches and just women from the town and stuff. He's like, you can have any girl that you want. But it turns out that Jack Calder, he actually has his eye on someone else, a serving girl who is a Jewish woman, and his buddy tells him, "Oh, it's a waste of your time. Jewish women, they're supposed to be cold between the legs." And but he goes after the girl, and she begs him not to take her, that she's chaste and she's a virgin. He just says, "Not for much longer." So the next day, at the wedding, he's married to this Faith Armitage, and everyone in the town is out to watch them. And while this is going on, the serving girl who was raped by him is telling her brother what happened, and her brother is vowing, her brother Jacob is vowing that he's going to punish Calder for what he did to his sister. Well, Faith, it's their wedding night, and Calder, he wants to consummate the marriage, and he comes in, and Faith is bathing. She says, "I'm just preparing myself." And she says, "Well, you know, just be patient, my lord." And she convinces him to wait a little bit longer. But then we see her, she does some kind of ritual with a frog, and a blade, and she puts all this stuff in the thing that was supposed to be her bathing pool. She actually kind of uses it as a cauldron. Well, she goes to him and they're together, but the next morning he's called and finds out that most of his men have been murdered. So the story goes on from there, and we have several flashbacks to Faith growing up. We see her with the nuns at different ages, and they show her development, and they go into a lot of detail. I won't recount it all, but it turns out these nuns, they're actually in secret. They're actually witches in secret, and the whole convent is actually a front to hide themselves from persecution. And so they bring up Faith in the tradition of a witch. And there's one moment I will mention. There's a cool flash page where it's kind of the moment where Faith takes the next step in her development, where the three witches appear to her, and this is a cool splash page.
Bless you.
Me? Yeah, thanks.
She just sneezed.
Yeah, so there's a cool splash page of the three of them appearing to her. And they give her the whole history. Actually, her Faith's father was murdered by Calder as well. And this is her motivation to take revenge. And so this whole thing, this whole history here was all a setup. And so back in the present, she's doing further incantations that will make Calder obsessed with her in a way that he'll live for her love, and his heart will be completely dedicated to her, and he'll just be his obsession. And her plan is that on her deathbed, she'll tell him that it was his love and his obsession with her that killed him, and that she's getting her revenge for killing her father. But while this is all going on, some people come to Calder and tell him that they've discovered that this convent is actually a place of magic, that the nuns are actually witches. And so they raid the convent, and his men are rushing in and killing the nuns. And one of them, before she's killed, she tells him that the murders of his men was revenge for a convent ward, Faith Armitage, and his eyes get big because, that's his wife. So she's bathing that night. As it happened, the three witches appear in her pool as a vision and tell her, the convent is burning. Calder knows he's coming for you quickly. She said, "Should I escape? Should I run?" She said, "No, grab a weapon, a knife, kill him. You're gonna have to abandon your plans to draw this out and just kill them in any way that you can before your vengeance is taken from you, because there's someone else that wants to kill him." But unfortunately, before she can get there, as Calder is going back to confront her, Jacob, the brother of the young Jewish girl that Calder raped, appears and stabs him in the stomach. So before Faith can get there, and so she sees him as he dies, and Jacob thinks that she's mourning her husband, but it's actually she's upset because she wanted to kill him. So Calder is dead, and Faith is not able to get her vengeance, and the three witches appear, and they say, "Well, this is unfortunate," and they explain to her, "This is actually would have been a double revenge," and they explain to her, "You're actually the reincarnation of Ursula, and Calder is the reincarnation of the barbarian Kuth, and they explain to her what we saw in the prologue. And so she's so distraught that not only was she not able to get vengeance for her father, that Ursula wasn't able to get vengeance against Cuth, that she takes the blade and stabs herself in the stomach and kills herself. And the witches are like, "Oh, you dumb girl, you would have had a great future. You would have led the convent, the survivors of the convent, and you would have brought them up as the leader of the convent, you foolish girl. But you're right that there will come another day, there will come another time where Ursula's reincarnation will meet Cuth's, and they'll walk again in London, and you will meet and hate again. And there will be revenge." In particular, one of the witches, you know their names, it sounds like, not the crone or the beautiful one, but the one in between with the hood. She's like, "There'll be a day, I'll see to that." And that's the end of the first story.
Sounds pretty cool. I don't have it.
Yeah, I was surprised. It's really intense, really cool. It's long. I mean, I actually skipped over a lot of the scenes that were interesting about her, about Faith being brought up by the witches and stuff. It kind of keeps flipping back into the earlier 1300s. It's like 42 pages, and it was 295.
Wow.
So I'm interested to see where the next story goes, the next book, out of the three, because I was thinking that,
So
Faith
this
would be a
was this all
continuing
was
character.
this all the three?
No, that was one issue.
That's one issue. Wow.
Yeah, so there's two more, and then there was another
Yeah.
follow-up miniseries.
Did you buy that one too?
I got that one too, yeah, all for a quarter.
Latour.
Yeah.
1998. A few
So
years
yeah,
later.
covered a lot of ground in one issue. I thought, the whole thing was going to be about Faith and Calder, but I'm assuming that the next issue will be a new incarnation of the two.
Yeah. That
So,
was a quarter.
yeah, normally it would be 50 cents. I don't like. I wonder if they bought a bunch of comics from somebody that had a whole bunch of vertigo because there
Well,
was.
it sounds like they had a runs of stuff too, though.
Yeah, there's
Like you could
like.
just pick up a run. It wasn't like somebody who just like Bill Bomer who picks up what he wants.
Right.
This guy sounds like he was a collector and he read the whole story of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of times in these bins you don't find runs of stuff, and about half of the comics that they have in the bins are like they must have had them for longer because they're more mixed up.
Yeah.
But then there's like a section toward the end where it must be like stuff that they acquired more recently that haven't been as mixed up and picked over as much. So,
Good deal. Those are,
yeah.
that's always fun to find stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I grabbed a few things that were fill-ins for me, like stuff that I was aware of, but then I was kind of like, because the price is so low, I'm more willing to take a chance on stuff. So I was keeping an eye out for stuff that looked interesting, that was complete, that I just hadn't heard of,
Yeah.
And it's like, if it's bad, it's who cares? It's only a quarter, But it's fun to kind of discover stuff you're not aware of.
So my next book just barely meets the date. It was from 2006, but it was from April, so just barely. But this is
Is that only isn't that only 9 years, Mike?
Oh
An
shit, you're
awful
right.
lot.
Oh
No,
fuck. We're
that's
not
okay.
2016. God damn it.
We're close enough. It's only like three
Did I fuck
levels.
up the next one too? Hold on a second. Oh, what year was this? It doesn't have a year.
That's close enough.
Well, it's close enough, but
Yeah.
it's Justice League of America Classified, and it's by Gail Simone, Garcia Lopez, and Klaus Janson. So some big names.
Yeah, that's a cool team.
And it's a 3-issue arc, and this is part two. I don't have part one. I have part two and part three, so this is part two, and it's a really cool thing because it's like It focuses on this General Dvorak Tuznik. And he seems to be a guy that's going after the JLA. And he's going after the JLA and different parts of the Earth by releasing viruses. And these viruses are pretty much destroying like different pockets and different people. And the Flash has come down with the virus. And it's almost like it's a Starro virus or something, like related to Starro the Conqueror. And it spreads, and Flash has it, and it looks like he's going to die. And he's currently like being treated to women and all kinds of different stuff in this part of the country, because they're all like criminal people that want them to take out the Justice League. And he's asking for money from all of them. He's like, "Well, you can pay me. Here's my account. Pay me, and I'll take out what you need." And one of the places is Santa Prisca, which is where Bane comes from. And the guy's like, "I've already paid you what I want to pay you. I'm not going to pay you anymore." So what he does is he releases the virus on Santa Prisca. And then, meanwhile, on the Justice League satellite, you know, John Stewart is keeping Flash as in one of his he's analyzing his body, and he's also protecting him from going like ballistic using his construct. And they're all analyzing him, and they're like, "How do we know we're not infected? Because we were in the same place as the Flash, and his metabolism is absorbing the virus at an accelerated rate, so he's not doing good." And John says, you know, John Stewart says, "I've scanned all of you, and you guys aren't infected. Don't worry." And they're kind of like working with the CDC, and Superman gave his word to one of them saying, "We're not infected," but they're worried. But the government is like, the president is like, "I'm very concerned about this virus," and they're looking at like military responses to like blow the satellite out of the sky and not tell the Justice League. So that's really cool. And the Wonder Woman decides to stay back, which is really cool because I like this time period. And it just shows that Wonder Woman will do what it takes to get the job done, where some of the others are more sympathetic. She's a warrior. She's an Amazon warrior. She knows what to do. She says, "If I need to kill the Flash, I'll kill the Flash." So she's Jeez. Like, "The rest of you guys go off. She's not going to kill him until she knows that all hell's going to be breaking loose, but she stays back. All the other heroes go out to try to see what's going on in Santa Prisca, because the town looks like it's destroyed. Everybody caught this virus and is pretty much dead. Martian Manhunter realizes that the fish aren't affected at a certain depth, but it's affecting animals, everybody. So it's pretty deep. Well, while Wonder Woman's making tea, Flash goes ballistic and he starts racing around the satellite and hitting Wonder Woman and beating the crap out of her. And Wonder Woman uses her brain. She's like, "Well, how can I take him out?" Well, his patterns seem to be very formulaic. He's attacking at 5 points like a starfish. So I'm going to predict where he's going to be next. So he comes out. He's already hit her like a gazillion times, but he's coming back to hit her again. And she knows he's going to be at a certain spot at a certain time because he's infected with this virus and he's very formulaic. And she just swings, man. She goes, wham! She clobbers the Flash. He goes like through like four different rooms and knocks him out. So John Stewart and Superman cause a plane from crashing again in Santa Prisca, because the people aboard the plane, once they hit the airspace, they started to die. And then there's this military group that's trying to take out this general that I just mentioned, and they're caught by the general, and it looks like he's going to kill them all. So that's how it ends. But it was a really cool story. It read really fluid. I really like how they characterized Wonder Woman. And I really like the situation. It does look like a dire situation is going on. But I am in 2016. I am in the future.
Yeah. You can clip that out and then just save it on your hard drive for
for next year.
For January's episode. That's all right. So my last thing was that I read some more Grimjack, and these are still Star Slayer backups. Last time I talked about Grimjack, I think maybe 2 episodes ago, I had talked about the first two parts of a story called Buried Past. And so I read the rest of that story, which was 3 parts and appeared in Star Slayers issue 14, 15, and 16. And as always, is by Jon Ostrander and Timothy Truman. One thing that's kind of cool about the way Ostrander writes these is that even though they're not even individual, like full-length stories, they're just backups. He has a pretty deft way of reminding you what happened last time in the intros. It's kind of direct at times where Grimjack is just narrating it, or he'll have some kind of conversation that flows pretty naturally, where it's not real awkward, to kind of get you back up to speed.
What issue of Star Slayer again?
These are from 14, 15, and 16.
Okay.
Yeah, the backups. 12 pages, I think, about. So the story this that so far was that he'd been approached by a guy named Cracker that he knew that had been turned into a vampire, and he wanted him to track down the vampire that was responsible, named Grinner, and then he wanted Grimjack to kill him. Grimjack had gone to this place called Wolfingham's and found this girl, Miranda Mastenbrook, who was Grinner's girlfriend, who's also a vampire. He chased after her and ran into a team of operatives from Cadre, which is his old organization, Grimjack's. Oh! Hear that?
Somebody ring a doorbell.
Somebody's going by the house or something. We're still working on the barking. She's like super protective of anybody like walking by the house or anything, or
How is she
dogs.
with other, like, you take her on a walk and you run into other dogs?
She's pretty good. I think she'll bark when they're at a distance, but she met the dog across the street that was friends with Luna, and they were playing. And the other day, she met a puppy, this new dog on the corner, and they were having fun jumping around and playing. So I think once she gets a chance to meet them, because when she was at her foster, she was there with a bunch of dogs. So we're actually taking her to a 4-week obedience class. Starting tomorrow or Tuesday night to like learn some commands and stuff like that. So we're curious to see how that'll go.
You're training you guys. You guys are learning to be, you guys are going to training. She's not.
Yeah, really, yeah. Yeah,
That's what
how
Caesar
to,
would say.
right? Yeah. See, we were watching some Caesar 911 the other day. That
See,
guy's pretty
the
awesome.
problem with the training classes is, at least if they're the cheaper ones, is they focus on treat therapy. Like, you do a good thing, you're gonna get treats. Where that doesn't work at on Harley at all, because she's got like ADD. She don't give a fuck. You could put a piece of steak in front of her and she's concentrating on where she is and what's going on. So it's like she didn't train very well, because it's all treat based.
Yeah, we're gonna give it a shot, and
If she likes
who
treats
knows?
and stuff, you guys will do a
She
lot.
does. Yeah, she does. And she knew some stuff already, like to sit and but she can be like ADD a little bit too, like you said, her attention will be distracted, but she definitely does know treats, and she was already when we got her, like she'd see that we had a treat and she sat down on her own.
See, our Harley's w very strange, 'cause she is more like a dog that would not definitely harm another dog. Like, I could 100% guarantee you, But she scares other dogs because she does that. Like if a dog's in the distance or in front of her, she barks. But it's not like a, like it's like a playful bark. Like she wants to catch up to it. But she, it's so weird because if you have people coming at us, instead of being in front of us, she does this thing where she looks like she's trained. I've even had people say, "You have trained that dog amazingly," and I haven't done shit. She just like, we'll be walking towards dogs, and what she does is she lays down and waits for that other dog to pass. I don't know where the hell she got that from. That wasn't part of the training at all. And she's like really good. Like I have people compliment me, like they're like, "Oh man, I wish I could train my dog like that." And I'm like, I didn't do
You're like,
shit.
thank you very much.
I usually take credit, right? Just because, like, thank you.
Why
But then
not?
they'll see her when when they're in front of her, and then it's like a race. She doesn't like people to be in front, and then she just wants to pass them, and she'll bark. So she scares people. It's weird. I don't understand it. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, we're kind of still trying to figure Mabel out.
It's very predictable, though. Like, I know exactly what she's gonna do.
Yeah, you learn their behavior and stuff, so
Yeah.
I don't know, we'll see how it goes. We're just kind of curious at this point and we'll see what happens. But anyways, yeah, so
'Cause I've had
Grimjack.
loose dogs come up to her, and she just wants to play. Do you know what I mean? They'll come up to her even aggressively, and she doesn't care. Matter of
Yeah, I
fact,
don't.
we picked her up at her foster's. She was boarding with a bunch of other pet bulls, and we were playing with her while the other dogs were around her. And one of the dogs got jealous and beat the crap out of her, and she just rolled over. Do you know what I mean? She just went on her belly and was submissive.
Yeah, I don't think it's aggression really with Mabel either. I think it's curiosity and communication, and at least with dogs, and I think she's still working through some issues that she had from her time before she was taken in at the shelter in Ohio when she was on the run and stuff. And I don't know, sometimes I feel suspicious that maybe she wasn't treated that well with whoever was her first owner or whatever, just how she kind of skittish and jumpy at times. But we'll never know for sure. All right, so yeah, the last Grimjack installment ended with him chasing after this Miranda, and he followed her into this other dimension, which was like a suburbia, and she changed into this just average-looking teenage girl at her father's house. So as we start this new installment, Grimjack is confronting her father, tells him, asks him questions, when does she come back, and tries to tell him the real deal. And Grimjack's not even sure if the father maybe is a vampire too, so he tosses a silver piece at him, and her father catches it, no problem, doesn't have an effect on him. He says, "Look, your daughter's a vampire, but I don't expect you to believe me, but that coin I just gave you is silver, so why don't you do me a favor and flip it to your daughter, and if she catches it and I'm wrong, I'll just get out of here." So he thinks her father must have known in the back of his mind because he goes along with it, and she freaks out, drops a tray of drinks, and turns into this like bat-like creature, and goes on the attack. It turns out she'd been feeding on her father. She goes after him, and he's got bite marks on his neck already, and Grimjack has to stab her from behind. It's kind of brutal. He actually he apologizes, but he has to decapitate the daughter in front of her father. He's like carrying her off to the tub. He's like, "I went back for the head," so the father's sitting there staring at her decapitated head. But so he has to throw her in the bathtub, and it's like, "There's only place I could complete the ritual: stuff the mouth with garlic, purify with flame, and cleanse with running water to scatter the ashes. So he leaves the father mourning his daughter, and he goes off to find the vampire responsible for all of it. So he's going back into the regular realm that he hangs out in, when he's attacked from behind by a vampire that has a white face and kind of like a sort of his makeup kind of reminds me of Starman from Kiss with the star on his eyes. So that installment ends with him knocked out from behind. In the next chapter, it turns out, he wakes up and Cracker, the guy that hired him in the first place, is there. He's like, I thought you were the one, or I thought that you were the guy that jumped me. He said, no, it's not me. Are you getting any closer to the guy that turned me into a vampire? So he kind of lets him know what's been going on. This is kind of like your recap if you're just picking up the story now. And he also mentions the part of it that we didn't really touch on this last installment about the Cadre, his Grimjack's former group that he was with. And it's like, what do they want with a vampire? And Grimjack says, I don't know, but I'm going to go find out. So he goes, for the first time, we get to see the Cadre headquarters, this huge fortress. And apparently it was created to deal with threats and the Sinosure. But they got to the point where the means became the ends, and Grimjack became more and more uncomfortable with their methods, so he quit. Well, the guy that runs the place, this guy named Mayfair, he comes to his office, and Grimjack is waiting for him and tells him apparently there's this sort of peace treaty between the two of them that they've agreed that they're not going to attack each other. So Grimjack wants to know why he was attacked by a group of their soldiers. He says they were on a mission and they perceived you as a threat to that mission. But eventually it gets Mayfair to explain that the vampires are a holdover from the Demon Wars, and that they think this vampire that turned Cracker into a vampire might be one of the last ones, and that they actually want to try to recruit it as an assassin. And this is the kind of thing that Grimjack is talking about that caused him to quit. So he ends up having to escape because Mayfair calls the guards on him. And the last part of the story, he goes to this old precinct that he used to work out of. And his former partner in the transdimensional police, Roscoe, is a guy that's still a part of the system, but since they're friends, he's willing to help Grimjack out. Grimjack wants to know if there was a floater, which is a floater is a dimension that floats in and out of phase with Sinisher, and there's no regularity to it. And somehow Roscoe is able to look that up in computer and stuff, and he tracks it down to there's only one dimension that qualifies fits the criteria. Place called Pidwyr. It's like PDWYR. And Grimjack knows of that because it's the place, he thinks to himself, it's the place I spent the best years and worst hours of my life. Now I know who Grinner really was and why he hadn't killed him when he knocked him out. So that part ends with him planning to go there. And the final part of Buried Past is it starts with him in this Pidwyr dimension outside this castle. And this dimension seems kind of like medieval in nature. So outside this castle, it used to be called Caer Mathan. And this is a place that Grimjack used to live. And we get a little insight into his past, or where he talks about his memories and where he used to be mentored to this chief of the land called Mathenwy, and this whole area kind of seems to have kind of like a Irish, old Irish kind of nature to it. And Mathenwy was the father of Rhian, the love of his life, and they were going to be wed and everything like that. But he, in the Demon Wars that keeps being referred to, he was unable to protect the realm from the demon wars, and he couldn't be there to die with them. So when he got back to Kaer Morhen, he found it had been ripped apart by the demons. Everyone had been killed, everyone but Rian's brother. And he had a man that had been like a brother to Grimjack. His name is Gideon. And in the present, Grimjack finds Gideon, and he's the one that has been going around as Grinner and drawing him out. And Grimjack tells him, "I looked for your body, I couldn't find it." And you're talking about reading out loud. Gideon has like an this dialogue's written in such a way it seems like a Irish accent. "John, it's not your fault. I was outside the manor when the attack came. I saw them kill Rian and Da before I died. You're well away from it. For what it's worth, I forgive you." So he came back after all this time, and he made Miranda a vampire because he was lonely. He wanted company. And Cracker, it turns out that he tried to take Miranda from Gideon. And so he turned him as revenge. And he spared Grimjack for old time's sake, but then he kind of turns into like the bat form that we saw Miranda in. Well, just as that's happening, Cracker shows up, that he followed Grimjack to the realm and he wants to take his revenge, and he says tells Grimjack that he's finally given in and fed, and he's here to get his revenge, and he's changed his mind about Grimjack killing him. So he turns into like a beast as well, and him and Gideon start fighting, and Grimjack's standing there like, "I don't know what to do. I don't know who to fight. I don't know who to kill." And just to make matters worse, the group from the cadre show up because they're there for Mr. Mayfair, and they want to recruit whoever wins out of the two vampires. So that gives Grimjack something to do. He starts fighting and killing the cadre soldiers while the two vampires are fighting, and then he takes out all the cadre, and then the two vampires, Cracker is back in his human form. He's on top of Gideon. And Grimjack tells him to get off, and he said, "Look," he's like, "you're gonna take this punk side? Thought we were friends." He says, "Cracker, just because you know my name doesn't make you my friend." And he chops his head off. So Gideon thinks, "All right, well, thank you. You know, I'm glad that I knew you wouldn't betray me, and et cetera, et cetera." And he says, "You're not Gideon. Gideon died 12 years ago. You're just another stinking vamp," and chops his head off too. "Stuffs the head of garlic, purify with flame, let the rising winds scatter their ashes, nevermore to mingle." And so he kills both of the vampires and goes back to Sinisher. And then the story ends with him back at Munden's bar. And he's just, drinking. Says, "I know, I'm gonna be okay. I know I'll get, once the sun rises, I'll feel better again. I just got to get there from here." And he's drinking with his buddy Bob. That's like a little reptile that gets like totally wasted all the time. But yeah, it was a pretty cool storyline. I'm definitely enjoying Grimjack and liking reading these stories. Like I said earlier with it, my suggestion of it as a TV show, it's just kind of cool how within one story kind of hop in between different dimensions. It's just this is a really cool concept that has gives you a lot of options, how you can go from like this kind of grimy, gritty city environment into this suburban area, into like this like medieval Gaelic country land, all in the space of one story, and it's just kind of neat. And I like how the in the storyline, you get a little bit of Grimjack's past, where he came from. So I like how they're developing his character over time. It's pretty cool. I can see why it's considered, a classic.
Cool deal. I haven't read a lot of Grimjack.
Yeah, I guess there's one or two more stories before, and then it starts with, Grimjack got its own title. So it's almost done with like the backup stories. I think there's one or two more, and then it goes into there's like a crossover with Star Slayer, and then it goes into the regular series, Grimjack.
Cool deal.
So that's my last thing.
Well, my last one is from 2001, which meets our date. It's The Dark Knight Strikes Again, book one. And I haven't read this, believe it or not. I read The Dark Knight
Yeah, same
Returns, and I
here.
haven't read the second one. I've heard a lot of bad things,
Me too.
but I'm reading it now, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It opens up. It's hard to be in this world. It's like there's not a lot of Batman in it, and a lot of it's told through the president and Jimmy Olsen. Like Jimmy Olsen's one of the reporters who's trying to uncover like that the president's corrupt. Like they have curfews. You have to be in your house like by 8, and they keep getting earlier and earlier. You're almost like being assimilated by like the government, and you can't do various things. And Olsen is always trying to uncover like why is this happening? What's going on? Where are all the heroes? Blah blah blah. And there's something going fishy with the president. Like there, and you don't know right away, but you get a lot of cool things about like media, like kind of like RoboCop. Like they have like Euphoria investments, like what you should invest in stocks, and it's like, so let us service you. We'll never let your stocks go flaccid. It has a naked woman on there. I just love this shit. And then they have like naked news. Like they have one reporter who's always naked and she's telling you about the news. I absolutely love it throughout the book. And then Carrie Kelly is now like Catwoman, and she wears like a Catwoman. But the story opens up is like the government's corrupt. Batman's trying to put things right. Superman is still against Batman, and it's pretty cool because when I read this the beginning of the story, I was like, are they introducing Aquaman? Like, what's going on? It's like there's this naked dude, and he's fighting like this Cthulhu-like creature in what looks to be the ocean, and he's actually like killing it and eating it. And then all of a sudden, after he kills it and stuff and comes out of it, I'm like, this is like the Aquaman, and you see like lips there, and it's Catwoman who's Carrie Kelly. She's actually looking at Ray Palmer, and it's Ray Palmer, and he's in a peachy just, and he's like, where the hell am I? And she's like, you're in a laboratory that you've been in prison for a long time. You've been in this peachy dish, and I'm here to rescue you. And Ray Palmer's there naked. I thought what she was gonna do was like shove him in her breast or something like that, but she actually swallows him, and she's got like these chucks, like Converse. I think that's why she calls them chucks. And she says like, "Chucks, give me wheels." And all of a sudden, she's got wheels on her shoes, and she's like blasting out of there. And people are shooting at her, and that's when she swallows Ray Palmer's to keep him safe. And she actually barfs him out when she rescues him. She
Jesus.
said, I'm sorry I had to throw up on you. It is such a cool thing. So she's rescuing Ray Palmer to take Ray Palmer to Batman. Superman is trying to stop this asteroid that's going to destroy the Earth. Like part of the situation is there's this asteroid coming towards Earth, and the president is like, don't worry about it, everything's going to be copacetic, and people are very worried. And you're learning about this with this naked girl on the news and stuff. It's called News in the Nude. Back to the killer asteroid. Speaking of to reporters, the president, she talks about the president, how he's like telling people to don't worry about it. And then during one session with the president, he goes very digitized, and you can't hear him, and you don't know what's going on with the president. But what you find out is the president is like a computer program that Lex Luthor is manipulating. And then you get a side shot of like the question, and this is awesome. You get like the question in this time, And they don't really introduce much other than they introduce him and he's looking for like what's going on, and he's being like Vic Sage as a reporter. So I really dig that. They introduce the question, and then Batman has these things that are working for Catwoman, which are these called they're called Bat Boys, and they invade a facility that they need to take down him and Catwoman, and they actually rescue somebody. And it's cool because you know who they rescue? They rescue Barry Allen. It's awesome. The government's been using Barry Allen as a power source because like electricity became free, and you're like, why is electricity all of a sudden free? They're using Barry Allen to like power the world.
Oh, crap.
And Batman sends Carrie Kelly to go rescue Barry Allen, and they rescue Barry Allen. And Barry Allen gets the ring on his finger and he pops it out and he's like, "What happened to my costume?" And Carrie Kelly says, "Well, I changed it a little bit and it looks pretty goofy. But it's awesome. It pops out of his ring." And Adam's there to protect her. Like him, Adam and Flash are working together, and then Superman is with Wonder Woman and a Green Lantern one. This Green Lantern is not Hal Jordan, by the way. He's some weird punk rock Green Lantern. But it's really cool because it looks like Superman has some kind of relationship to Wonder Woman, and there's Captain Marvel, and he looks like he's got like 90 years old, like he's actually aged. And they introduce Brainiac, who's working with Luthor. To try to, they're actually going to destroy Kandor, and Superman's like devastated because he starts killing people in Kandor, including Supergirl. So Superman and Batman aren't getting along at all. Superman decides to invade the Batcave, and the dinosaur goes after him, and he has Bizarro go after Superman. And Flash like loads Superman with a bunch of like bombs. He just like plants them on his body, and you hear boom, 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 boom. They like take him out. Green Arrow's there on Batman's side. It's awesome. It really is. And then there's a huge fight scene at the end where Batman, you know, he invaded his cave and Batman puts on these kryptonite gloves and just starts beating the shit out of Superman. And he's like, "I'm done talking. Get out of my cave." I like Frank Miller writing Batman. Like I even like loved All-Star Batman. So I'm like it's very different, you know. And I just read Frank Miller do the Spawn one, the Spawn Batman crossover. This is kind of like an extension of that. But I expected it to be bad, you know, because so many people hated it, and I think it's like brilliant. It has really cool shit in it. Like I dig it. I dig how they're using the Flash. I dig how they use Superman and Batman, Catwoman, these Bat Boys, Lex Luthor. It's been awesome.
Where do you think the discrepancy comes from, or what do you think's different about your taste that you like it a lot more?
I don't know. I don't know. I like a lot more than a lot of people. So, and that could be it. I enjoyed it. I escaped for, this was probably, took me an hour to read. And I just enjoyed it. And I looked at, I actually went through it again, you know, looking at all the pictures and the breakdowns again this morning. And I really like it. I'm looking forward to reading book two. This was 15 years after the original. And I really dug it. Like I'm getting ready for the new one, which is Frank Miller story, but Azzarello is writing it. So I thought I would
Masterpiece.
knock this one out. And I was really happy with it. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I think if I want to say, I remember people being maybe a little like of the two, All-Star Batman was the one that they were harsher toward
Oh, that's
than,
awesome. I
but.
loved All-Star Batman. Like I it didn't finish though. All-Star Bat unlike All-Star Superman, All-Star Batman did not finish. There was so many open questions, and I sat down and read that like in one weekend. Like I had them piled up, and I fell in love with it. I thought it was great. Yeah, it's asshole Batman, but it's awesome. It's an Elseworlds, you know? It's a different take on it, just like this is. And
That's cool. Yeah, it would
I
be
hear Frank
interesting to
Miller's
look at
really
sometime.
sick, but I didn't research it. I don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah, I don't know if that was ever confirmed or because I know it started with pictures of him that were spotted that
Yeah.
where he didn't look good,
It
but
looked like he had cancer or something.
yeah. So, and I don't know if there was ever any confirmation of that or if it was all speculation or not. I
Yeah.
don't know. It's interesting to see earlier Frank Miller watched like this documentary a couple months ago that he was in when it was and it took place in the 80s. So they advent like Harlan Ellison interviews all these like important creators and he's in it, but he was like really young, like kind of the beginning of his career. He's really enthusiastic about comic books and stuff.
Yeah, his style changed a lot over the years. But I think I like every incarnation. Like I love what he did with Daredevil. Like that was my first Frank Miller. Because I was picking those off the stand. I didn't get every issue, but I got most of it. It was like when the Elektra stuff and the Bullseye stuff and it became a really dark book. And then he did like Batman, and then he's done a lot, like 300 and Sin City, and I've enjoyed those. So like I like his work a lot. And I liked all his films except for The Spirit, so much so that I want to watch The Spirit again and just judge it again. Because I don't know why I didn't like it, but
Yeah, I know that one. I mean, I know it doesn't mean anything to whether you'll like it or not, but I know that one was like really badly reviewed.
yeah, I didn't like it.
Spirit.
I saw it, and but I want to revisit it again.
But
But yeah,
would be interesting to read
I think
that
you'll en
sometime.
I think from what I know about your taste that you'll enjoy this. I also think you'll enjoy All-Star Batman. But you look at comics differently like I do. You have like a histor you want to know stuff, you know? Some people look at everything with such a critical eye, and this is not my bat. I like change because without change, it's just like a merry-go-round. I like things to change.
Yeah, I don't care if I mean it doesn't bother me if different interpretations of characters. That's definitely not something that gets on my nerves. Like I just go in like that's one of the things I find interesting about superheroes. And while like I'll read like a Silver Age Superman story and I'll go and I'll read a modern Superman story and it's like I like to see how they change,
Yeah, so do I.
and how they reflect the time period that they were written in.
This one's very like Frank Miller, from what I gained from things I he tries to write a lot of commentary about current things that are going on, you know? Like you see it in the like news reports, the naked news, and you see I don't know how he feels about various things, but you could kind of get messages out of it, you know?
I think that's what part of the bad reviews come from is that people are like finding his opinions less and less desirable, and so they're partially judging it based on that. Like, I know there was, I never read Holy Terror, but I know there was a lot of people that had a problem with Holy Terror, and
Haven't read that either, yeah.
yeah, like they were kind of partially, it seemed like a lot of the reactions and reviews were like a reaction against what he was saying or what they interpreted him to be saying. And I mean that sometimes that can be interesting. Sometimes, I can appreciate art even if I don't agree with it, So, yeah, I guess the moral of the story is it's always best to form your own opinions, I mean I'm not I don't always do that. I can be affected by reviews and stuff, but it is a good reminder to like, sometimes to check stuff out for yourself and form
Yeah.
your own opinion.
It's weird for me because I have, I have close-knit brothers and friends, but I don't listen to anybody except for myself when it comes to comics.
Oh, but that's good. That's a good thing
And
about you.
it's because, people will say, "Mike, I think you like this," or "I think you'll not like it," or whatever. I want to read it for myself and experience it for myself. Because, yeah, my tastes are very different, and they could even be different, like, in the time of day I read the damn thing. So that's why I try to fo that's why I'm all over the place when I read comics, because they're like, why the fuck is he reading this? I started reading War of the Time Forgot. It's because I felt like reading it. Do you know what I mean? I don't ever pick up a book and like, oh, I gotta read this, or I gotta read this. I
Right,
don't
like
do that.
I gotta keep up, like
Yeah, I read what I want when I want and what I'm in the mood for. So that's why I think I might judge a book really harshly if I read it late at night, and it's because I shouldn't be reading it when my mind is in that state. That's why I try to read like crazy. Like, I like read Archie before bed. I like to read like Zombie Tramp. I like to read the Disney comics from IDW, because I don't have to think much. I don't have to absorb it. It's just like a read a story kind of thing.
Yeah, those are good,
Take my mind off of it,
before bed.
Yeah. But yeah, I was really happy with it. I don't know if it goes downhill from here, because I got two more volumes to go.
That's true.
It could go into something that I don't like. But as the issue one, I dug the hell out of it. Like, I really dug that Carrie Kelly's still like a kid, and everybody's like, why are you putting a kid in danger? Because that's always been like a thing with Batman, right? Even going back to early Golden Age Batman, he was a kid, and that's what he did. And every incarnation of Robin, they were in their teens, high school, or sometimes younger.
It's funny because they introduced him as a character for the reader, the young reader, to identify with. And then that's really all there was to it. And then with and they didn't really sort of think about the issue of him putting a kid in danger. And so then that raised that issue without really like that being the intention, but it brought this different element to it than they weren't really.
In the 90s, there was a story by Rick Veitch, and I can't remember what it was titled exactly. But what it was, its intent was sidekicks, in how dark the universe could be for these sidekicks. And it was an independent comic. I even remember, I think it was like King's Hell that published it or something like that. But if you want to read an interesting book about like a dark take on sidekicks, that is a really good one to pick up. Yeah, but yeah, I think you would like Dark. I think it would be a good book to read if you were going to read Master Race, to know the history of it, because it's like a trilogy, right?
Right, yeah, I would probably before I would read Master Race.
Yeah, but that's it.
That'll do it, I think. Wrap it up.
So you can reach us at Mike Myers Brunch, or at MythMakingETC on the Twitters, and MythMakingETC@gmail.com. And Mike Myers, no, that's not my email. Mike@comicbooknoise.com. And Geek Brunch Podcast on Facebook. It's geekbrunchpodcast.com on the web. And thanks for all the questions. There was a lot of questions, a lot to think about. We've been getting a lot of questions lately. So we had three different people ask questions. Oh, there was another one. Shit, I forgot it because it was on a different place. We should answer that real quick.
Oh yeah, didn't you? You had it on
It
your
was
page
Joel
instead of
Eustace,
the.
I think. Yeah. He says, "Have you ever read GLA Virtue and Vice?" And I think that was a hardcover. And I did.
Yeah, I don't remember it real well, but I think I read it back around when it came out.
Was it JLA Virtue and Vice? JLA.
That was the JLA JSA crossover, wasn't it?
Don't know. I'm trying to look it in my database and I can't find it. Because that would tell me if I did read it.
Yeah, I think it was JLA slash JSA for Toon Vice.
Oh, that's probably why I can't find it. Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely read this. This was Jeff Johns and Chris Pacheco. Yeah, it was a hardcover. It was Goyer, Jeff Johns. So yeah, I read it, and it had
Yeah.
Jesus Marino. He just did something on Aquaman, and his art was like awesome. Especially the way he was drawing Mera. It was cool. But I think that's all. Did I give
Yeah.
everything? Did you want to plug your other podcasts from Kit to Flash?
Yeah, mythmakingetc.com. You can go to that page and it's all there, or in iTunes. Should have a new episode of From Kid to Flash up tomorrow, hopefully.
And I just put up a new podcast. What I essentially did was I post my weekly reads all the time, and what I did is I turned it into a podcast. And
There you go.
so far, I've gotten really good reviews, so I think people like it. So I'm gonna probably keep doing that. I meant for it to be 10 minutes, and I got over carried. It turned into like an hour, over an hour.
You can always just do it however long you end up talking or whatever.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes, you're talking to yourself on a solo podcast. How, like, for me, I don't script anything, I don't take any notes, it's all off the cuff. So my intent is to like go over the books and why I rated them the way I did and what emotions came out of it and that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's Mike M's Weekly Reads on geekbrunchpodcast.com,
There you go. Check it out.
which has a retro thing. That's how I became a podcaster, is through Mike M's Weekly Reads that I did on the Comic Book Noise website. I started doing those, and Derek said, "You should do a podcast." And then that's how that all spawned.
And now the weekly reads are a podcast. It's
Now
all
the weekly
full
reads,
circle.
it's many, many, many years later, almost 10 years, it became a podcast.
We'll celebrate your 10-year anniversary next year.
Yeah, I'm already in 2016 right
Oh,
now.
that's true. Yeah, you couldn't wait to celebrate.
God damn it, I
You
can't believe
must
that happened.
have moved to Australia. You're in the future.
I must have, yeah.
Yeah,
Well, have a good day. And I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. What was 2 weeks? The con?
so we'll
So we'll be at the
figure that
con.
out. Yeah.
That's gonna be fun, my friend.
We'll do a live podcast.
Yeah.
Recorded
Video.
live, face to face.
Yeah. I think you're gonna have a blast.
Yeah, I'm getting really excited.
I wish Knutson would go. That's the one part
I know
that I.
we gotta get
He said
badges
he says he's
together.
gonna be there one day, but I last time he said that he didn't go.
Yeah.
So my hopes are not very high.
I might try to go to Heroes Con sometime too, so
Yeah.
hopefully one way or the other I get to meet him.
Yeah. Daryl will be there for sure. Alan will be there for sure. There's a lot of other friends that we have that I'm not sure you know, like M Bats and
Yeah, some people
yeah.
I know of but haven't really talked to or whatever. So.
All right, well, have a good day and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.